live from Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, it's the 1985 Jerry Lewis Super Show to benefit the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Over the next 22 hours, you will see Christian Alfonso, Pearl Bailey, Hinton Battle, Milton Berle, David Brenner, Charlie Callis, Glenn Campbell, Charles Honey Cole, The Commodore, Bart Connor, Danny Cooksey, Norm Crosby, Billy Crystal, cast of Dames at Sea, Sammy Davis Jr., Kevin Dobson.
No, you will not. Over the next 4 hours, you will not hear or see any of those people, mostly for the reason is that most of the people that Ed McMahon, including Ed McMahon, is announcing here for the Jerry Lewis Telethon from 1985 are dead. So we definitely will not be hearing them. But there's Julius LaRosa, Emmanuel Liberace, dead.
Philip Charles McKenzie, Brandon Maggot, Dorothy Malone, Jared Martin,
right.
A. Martinez,
yes.
Donald Jazz Band,
right.
Maureen McGovern,
she's alive.
Bill Morris,
he's alive.
Newton, Harold Nichols, Christopher Norris, Donald O'Connor,
he's dead.
Heather O'Rourke, Tony Orlando,
he's alive.
Gregory Peck,
dead.
George Papard,
dead.
Danny Pintaro,
he's alive.
Capone,
alive.
Michael Praed, Lou Rawls,
dead.
Peter Reckles, Paul Regina, Lee Remick,
dead.
Mary Lou Retton,
alive.
Robin Riker, Kristen Rogers.
Is this going to be 22 hours of who's dead and who's alive? Nice show, buddy.
Hey, Roger. First of all, let's just start right off the top. You have no right to talk because you're not even supposed to be here right now.
Who says so?
I don't even hear you, Roger.
Who says so?
I don't even hear you.
You love me so much, I'm in your brain.
Well, I guess you're in 50,000 watts of everybody else's brain,
you know that
too.
Filling that you got last week in your teeth? That's how you're receiving me.
This is the Elton Jim Super Show from 1985.
There you go. And you know that you said the cast from Dames at Sea?
Yeah.
I saw it when it opened on Broadway. Hi-o!
Hi-o! 1985, you know what? I mean, I mean, producer today is Elif, Garris, right?
Yeah.
And, in fact, I asked her today, is your name with a hard G or a soft G? And she said, I don't know what that means. But it's you have a hard G, Garris.
Yeah.
Soft G would be the J sound.
Yeah.
You're a Garris.
Right.
Not a Jairus.
No.
All right. You're an Elif.
Alive.
Can you what do a half an hour on that?
Wait, what is your, is it, how do you say
Elif,
your name?
Elif.
Did you say alive?
I'm alive, like
oh,
the
alive.
Game that you were
said,
just doing.
I thought you said your name was Elif. I'm like, Elif? I thought it was Elif.
What if I just messed with you and went with it?
You could have. At this point, at 1 a.m., I believe anything. But, so Roger, I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad I'm here, too.
I'm glad you're pitching in. I'm sure you want to go home.
I'd like to go home and sleep.
You've put in a full shift, and I'm sure you did a yeoman's job. But
well, you
at
know,
the same
I left
time.
Here at, we're talking Sunday morning, so I left here at 5, got home about 5:30, fell asleep shortly thereafter, which is a nice way of saying passed out, got up at 12:30, left the house at 4:15-ish, got here by 4:45 and started at 6.
What the heck?
You know,
yeah,
what,
I know.
You know what I love about you, Roger?
That I should be 6 feet under?
No. No. I mean, that goes without saying.
Thank you.
But, no, this is, you know, I'm looking at my notes here,
uh-huh.
You know, that I have meticulously put together.
Yeah.
And nowhere on my schedule, unbelievably,
yeah.
Does it say, Roger gives rundown of sleeping habits. I don't have that topic.
Wait a minute. Wasn't I supposed to call in at 1:15 and give that to you?
Now, if you also could give us the mechanics of putting together a lesson plan.
Oh, no, we're not doing that.
Class.
No.
What was
We've
the
covered
other one?
That territory, and you failed the test.
I filled in a few weeks ago in a row. For Matt Bubala at the same time. And so Roger and I were working together and we had a ball. And so on one week, I asked a very Simple question.
Very simple question.
And Roger went into a 25-minute dissertation about what it takes to put together a lesson plan for a classroom. I could literally hear the radios being shut off in my ears.
I gave him
the
Yeah, I gave him the short version.
Oh, God. It was like a 7-disc audio book. And then the next week
changed to side two.
Yeah, then I came back the next week, and then you.
I was still talking.
Yeah,
what?
Well, no, but then you launched into. Oh, do you remember the other one? You launched into another
a diatribe about what was the second one?
And I said, I thought you couldn't outdo yourself on the lesson plan, but I just think you did. And now I didn't think you could outdo yourself on those two.
Yeah.
And right out of the box.
You know, I like keeping you on your feet.
Right.
Seriously. I know you're standing, but I like to keep you on your toes. You know what I'm saying?
Right
out
of the box.
Because I don't want you to get complacent whenever we're together on the radio.
Impossible.
No way.
Right out of the box. Roger gives me that exciting and compelling content of his sleeping and working schedule. Once again, appropriate for Labor Day. We're talking about jobs and we're talking about working. So actually,
was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a scary way, I say kudos to you, Roger.
Thank you.
I mean, interesting? Certainly not. but appropriate. Yes. A+.
See?
A+ for
I'm sticking to the material here, buddy.
A plus for appropriateness. F for interesting. But still, at 1 a.m., anything goes. So we thank you, and as I said, I mean, I don't want to keep you longer than you have to be here. Hopefully, you're no, but hopefully,
someone will
come in,
or
at least do your newscast, because I would hate to have you. I can only imagine what a Roger Badish it would be. Roger Babblish after 12 hours on the radio.
I might be babbling.
Yeah, after 12 hours. So.
Well, it's got to end soon because my parking spot expires in a couple hours. I'll never get out of the parking lot.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. Well, poor guy has to go home and sleep for like 2 hours.
And then you got
to
come back.
Grocery shopping.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got to be back this afternoon.
He's going to be back. Then he'll go grocery shopping.
Then he'll be grocery shopping.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, my list. Let's not even get into that. Oi, oh, my gosh.
Oi. Is there something I don't know about?
Hey, I should tell you.
There's a poison. There's a poison here. Well, yeah, then will you be doing that that lesson plan preparation?
No, you're done. Come Tuesday, there's nothing about starting school for me. I don't do that anymore.
Oh, wait a minute. This just in.
Yeah.
This just in at 1:16 a.m.
Uh oh.
Aretha Franklin's funeral has just ended.
Oh, really? Are you sure?
Just ended now.
I'm waiting for the rerun.
Wow, that was 7 hours.
Yeah.
I think it just ended now. They finally pulled out of the
almost
of the
everybody
cemetery.
In the world, I think, appeared there.
Yeah,
almost.
I was upset. I mean, I'm sitting there going, they didn't ask me.
Exactly.
Who was left?
Why didn't they ask you?
I could have inappropriately grabbed Ariana Grande too, like that.
Yeah,
minister did.
No, I don't think so.
Did you see that?
Yeah,
that was. I don't. But no, I'm giving the guy a break on that.
Why?
I think he just kind of. I don't think he was going for something. I think a lot of times it's hard. You're on the run.
You know,
you're just kind of putting your arm. I don't know if he needed to put his arm around her.
I don't think he did. Yeah, did he put it around anyone else?
No, that's a good point.
Did he put it around any of the guys?
No. Well, right. I think he tried to do it to Bill Clinton, and he just sort of gave him that look. But and then 17.
Well, probably the security guys.
Yeah, 17
up.
Secret Service guys jumped on him. Pete Davidson wasn't around to save Ariana for that.
No, so it was extremely inappropriate.
Yeah, but that was what a. And I had the biggest kick I got out of the Aretha Franklin funeral was. When I saw her the day before, and they did the memorial service where the public was allowed in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They had an interesting camera shot of Aretha in the casket, and she was wearing a red dress, and it was an open casket completely.
Right.
Not even the legs were covered. The whole body was exposed, and her feet were crossed.
I saw
Did
that
you notice
too.
That?
I thought maybe I wasn't seeing it correctly.
And I thought that was so cool because it was like that's probably the way she either slept or when she laid on the couch, maybe when she laid down on the couch and watched television. She probably had her feet crossed, and I guarantee, since she seemed to have orchestrated that entire funeral, I'm sure she made a point to say, when I'm in the casket, I want my feet crossed just like I do when I'm, you know, laying around the house.
All right, so I have a question. This is legitimate.
Yeah,
okay, so,
yeah.
And I'm not trying to be funny or anything.
No.
All right, so, I have
Roger, believe me.
I couldn't be funny if I tried.
Hi-yo.
Thank you. So I've never been to a funeral that's had a full open casket. It's always just been the top part has been open, if at all. So I'm wondering if that, the crossing of the ankles, is something that is normally done by the undertaker.
Could be, just to be...
Just for
the
whatever
feet
reason.
Don't dangle, or how do they sit? Or, you know, yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
If there are any undertakers... Usually, there's somebody actually on my Facebook page who used to listen to the afternoon show all the time, and he's a very loyal listener, and I know he's even on WGN quite every so often. Eric the Undertaker. If Eric the Undertaker happens to be up right now at 1:20 a.m., please call at 312-981-7200. Or if there are any Undertakers, I would assume, we automatically assume that Undertakers would be up at 1 o'clock because, you know, they're always up. They're always on the clock, right?
Well, not necessarily, but who knows?
No,
I mean,
never know.
You know.
But yeah, if you're an Undertaker, give me a call, 312-981-7200, to either prove or disprove, I think, a legitimate question that... Roger has.
Maybe it has something to do with the positioning of the body, that crossing the feet like that
that's a good
helps
point.
The body stay in a certain position.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a good point. Good point. Well, anyway, it is 1:20 here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. I am Elton Jim Toronto, your host this morning until 5 a.m., filling in for Nick DiGilio. As I said, we'll be here till 5 a.m. Got lots to talk about, lots planned, so I hope you'll stay tuned. There's no work today except for Roger in a few hours, 12, 13, 14 hours from now. But I think everyone else, for the most part, has Labor Day off. So you can use up some of your sleep time now and go to sleep at 5 o'clock or take a power nap in the afternoon. So stay with us this morning between 1 to 5. Elton Jim here with you for Nick DiGilio. We will take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be with you until 5 a.m. At the beginning of the show, I played a little snippet from one of the openings of the Jerry Lewis Telethon, which was a Labor Day tradition for more than 50 years, I believe. And I certainly grew up watching those. And as time went on, as a little kid, I remember being in the 70s. I mean, you just automatically associated Labor Day with Jerry Lewis until he was... kind of let go or fired from the MDA telethon. And yeah, Jerry was kind of a polarizing personality, no doubt about that. One of the biggest and most popular entertainers of the 20th century on his own as a filmmaker, as a comedian, and certainly as part of his comedy duo with Dean Martin. Martin and Lewis were the Beatles of the 1950s in terms of comedy. They were that big. They used to stop traffic. And Jerry Lewis, you can say whatever you want about him, but you certainly cannot deny the hard work that he did for muscular dystrophy for more than 50 years. And he put that awareness of that disease certainly into the American and the worldwide mainstream. And I believe he raised more than $2 billion over the 50 years of those telethons. So, you know, yeah, some of the telethons were kind of cheesy at times. And Jerry, as I said, could say some off-color things or some very polarizing remarks, but you certainly could not deny that the guy was dedicated to bringing awareness to muscular dystrophy. He was a tireless performer. I was lucky enough to see him perform a couple of times. One time I saw him on Broadway in Damn Yankees, and also saw him perform, I believe it was at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook back in the early 90s. So this is not the Jerry Lewis telethon, but it is an Elton Jim Toronto-thon, if you will. But only 4 hours. Jerry used to do 22. I'm only doing four on Labor Day, but I hope you will stay tuned. We will have, as I said, we will not have Norm Crosby. We will not have Ed McMahon. But we will have interesting, compelling content for you and information between now and 5 a.m. Before I go to a break, we were talking about Aretha Franklin's funeral. with Roger. And I was saying how I saw on television during the memorial service the day before her funeral, they had a camera shot of Aretha's body in the casket. It was an open casket, full length body casket that was her whole body was exposed, and she had her feet crossed. And we were wondering if that is something, you know, like most caskets, as we know, are only the you know, from the waist up is what we see, and the lower half is closed. And so we don't really see the feet. I've often heard that sometimes they don't even put shoes on the people because why bother? You don't see it. But I'm wondering, is there some kind of way that the body sits better if the legs are crossed and we never see that? Or was that just something that Aretha wanted to do? Because maybe that's the way she slept on the couch. So she wants to go into eternity as comfortable as she was. Let's go to the phone lines here. This is Richard. Are you there, Richard?
Yes, I'm here, Jim. Yeah, the reason I called was for when I pass, I'm going to have an open couch. And I
an open
believe...
couch?
Yeah.
I'm going to have a recliner. I'm going to have a recliner.
Well, that's kind of what they call them, I believe.
It's called an open couch?
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. I never heard that term.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe just the preference because my dad was laid out in one back in 61, and his feet were not crossed. He was just normal legs and that.
Oh, okay.
And he was fully dressed with shoes on and everything.
Right.
And when we were picking out the, if you want me to go on a little bit, when we were picking out the casket, we were looking at them, and there was only one with the open, completely open. And I asked my mother, she said, well, we'll take that one. And back at that time, it was like about $1,300, which was nothing today.
Yeah,
but,
right.
I said, how come you're taking that one? She said, well, he wanted to be fully closed because the way you're presented is the way hopefully you'll be up in heaven.
Right. Well, that's why I think I might go for the recliner. Or just a beanbag. A beanbag might not be. That might be interesting. Could you imagine if you walked into a funeral home and the person was in a beanbag?
Yes, that would be something. But even when you talk to the funeral directors around here, they're not familiar with the open casket, completely open casket. Now, back in the 70s, it was automatic in Cleveland. My mother-in-law, she was automatically just laid out in an open one, completely open one.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I'll tell you, thanks a lot. I appreciate...
Hey, can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Any news on Gary? We missed you when you were with Gary.
Oh, I thank you. Appreciate that. No, I haven't spoken to Gary in quite a long time. I'm really not sure what's going on.
Is he still in Chicago?
I think he is.
Oh, okay.
I know he does a podcast, but
don't do that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
People.
No, we had a good time, and I appreciate you being a loyal listener, Richard.
Yes. Okay. Thanks, Jim.
Great. Thank you. Bye. Yeah. You know, when I saw Aretha laying in the casket at that memorial service, I just had a feeling that it was that was Aretha. That was her little touch of her own personality there. With her legs crossed. I don't know, as I said, we didn't get a call from an undertaker if that. I think that was just Aretha's way of saying, she embraced the diva, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And I think just her feet crossed and legs crossed in the casket was just her way of saying, just as Richard said, that's the way she did it on Earth, and that's the way she's going to do it up there. So, give her some R-E-S-P-E-C-T, okay? The Queen of Soul. Jim Toronto with you here this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. He'll be here till about 5 a.m., so we hope let me be the first to say Happy Labor Day. And we will be talking about this holiday in the next, after the news here, about what was your first job? What was your worst job? We are celebrating. Labor Day is a celebration of working. The labor movement in the United States, and the working man and working woman of this country. So we'll be talking about first jobs and worst jobs after this. But right now, it is about 1:31, and I look over, and it is still My good friend Roger Badish.
Yeah, I'm the one who's been here 50 hours, not you.
I've only been here a half hour, and I'm already babbling. So what's the story, Roger? You stick around till 5?
You know what? I've moved a bed in.
You going to cross your legs like Aretha?
Well, it depends if the coffin's open all the way or just partially.
Well, how great will that be? So like at the 3:30 news, Roger will be laying down on the couch just doing the news with a microphone next to him.
I'm going to call you from the car because I'll be driving around because I lose my parking spot.
That's too funny. Keep on working. Keep on working.
Wow.
How about that? We are working today. It's Labor Day. No one else is working, but I'm working. And Elif is working, producer tonight. And so is good old Roger Badish, who wasn't expecting to be working. But he is, and we thank him for that, as we hopefully will get his person to fill in for him after he's done. He's done with his shift. But the yeoman, hard-working guy that Roger Badish is, he's holding the fort down, and we appreciate that. Elton Jim, Toronto with you here, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning on a Labor Day. Let me be among the first to wish you a happy Labor Day. Don't know what you'll be doing later on during the day. Maybe just sitting back and relaxing. The weather might be a little iffy, a little warm, maybe some scattered showers. Yeah. There might be some bursts of sunshine and a nice day. But maybe you, as I said, might just be sitting around the house. Or perhaps you're going to be doing the big cookout, Labor Day cookout with a game of bags and all the rest of that stuff. You know, it's so funny because it's today, Labor Day, is the one of the unofficial ends of summer. We have a few of those, actually. Because according to Tom Skilling, who I've heard this from the horse's mouth,
Meteorological. I think
yeah.
There's an in there.
There is an or there's a good time to take one if there isn't one. It's a long word. Meteorological.
Ooh, very good.
Thank you. Wait, that's what do you think? I do this as a hobby?
You're a pro. But.
Yeah, I mean, jeez. But, yeah, so the meteorological, that's twice in a row. Anonymity. How about that? Anonymity.
Don't push it.
I couldn't say that about 3 weeks ago, if you remember that. remember I couldn't say anonymity?
Yes.
Funny thing is, I'm doing a play now,
yeah,
and I'm in rehearsals, and my character, I have to say anonymity.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I'm like, But now, that's why I'm practicing it, so that's now I can say anonymity.
Very good.
I can say anonymity now in my sleep.
There you go.
But,
three times fast.
Anonymity. Thank you very much.
Good.
Yeah. But now I forgot what I was talking about. Oh, yeah, so meteorological summer ended on September 1st. The unofficial end of summer is Labor Day, but then isn't the official end of summer, what, like the 21st with the solstice?
The start of fall, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so we've got quite a few ends of summer here, but this is one of them. This is the official. Doesn't the Chicago Public Schools and everybody else is probably going back next week?
A lot of the other schools have been going back for the last couple of weeks. But
I've been surprised.
CPS starts on Tuesday.
Yeah, I've been surprised how early some schools have been going back.
But they get out earlier.
Yeah, but still mid-August is.
Yeah. Well, college. Didn't colleges start a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, that's true.
I'm kind of jealous of college students. I miss those days.
Well, of course. You had no responsibility.
Except homework, and that was it.
You know what? I would kill for homework. I would kill to just have to write a term paper. If that was the hardest thing I have to do in my life.
I know.
Oh, my God. Think about it. Oh, my God. I have to write an essay and a term paper. I have to study for a test. Oh, wow. Big deal.
But what about the people who worked in college? So,
if
we're on the topic of Labor Day, I may as well pepper it in there.
Yeah, no, I worked all through college. I had a part-time job during college.
It's so difficult to balance the two.
Definitely. And I'm not here to pat myself on the back, but no one else will. I was even on the, I graduated with honors, and I had a part-time job. So there you go.
It's doable.
Yeah, it is doable. Well, listen to Elif. Yeah, anybody could do it, you jackass.
She's,
she's like, what are you? No, I'm just joking. Before we get off the topic of caskets, I was talking with Roger earlier about Aretha Franklin's funeral and how I noticed that her feet were crossed in her open casket. And so we've been talking about caskets and funerals. And before we go on to the next topic, let me just take this call here. We've got Jim. Hey, nice name. And thanks for calling. How you doing, buddy?
Nice name. It's a great name. What are you talking about, buddy?
Are you a James? Are you a Jim? What are you?
Jim. Oh, no, Jim James. No, Jim. I prefer Jim, of course, you know. And my feet will not be crossed, whether they whether they're seen or not. I can't sleep with crossed legs. That's number one, okay?
Well, it so cuts off it'll cut off your circulation. Oh, that's right.
I have nightmares. Are you kidding?
Oh, that's right. No, you won't have
anyway,
any. But you won't have any circulation.
All I want to tell you is I'm so old, I'm even older than Tom Skilling.
Wow. That's how. Now that's pretty
old. I'm 86.
Good for you.
86. And I want to tell you, when I kick the bucket, I will be wearing a Cubs World Series T-shirt, okay? And over that, no, I'm not kidding. Over that, I will be wearing a Cubs jersey. Okay?
Wow, nice.
Then there'll be a signed baseball in there with all my family, okay? And there'll be a bat, all right? But there'll also be a beep ball. A beep ball that beeps is for blind softball. I've been doing that since 1978.
Oh. You
know, and it's a national sport, and not many people know about it.
No.
But I want to tell you something first. I wish you'd call me, okay, and tell me when you're going to be on. I'll set my alarm clock.
Well, I don't know until about 2 or 3 days before. I just found out about this. I'm filling in, so I try to find out, and then I let people know either on my Facebook page or in other ways. But Jimmy, I hate to say, we certainly don't want you to leave anytime soon. But it sounds like when you do plan to go to that big baseball diamond in the sky, you're going to be all set, which is kind of cool. You'll be so if there's a pickup game in heaven, you'll be all set. You'll have your bat, you'll have your jersey, and you'll have your beeping softball.
It's ready to go. I have a regular clincher softball too. I play that all my life.
Oh,
you know?
Well, don't break. Oh, but don't break your knuckles with that thing. In those first three innings. Is a killer.
You kidding? I got a couple of bent fingers from that.
I used to play third base. Ow.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, you know, I always played normally outfield, but one time I played third base.
Oh.
Okay. And a line drive comes by, and sure enough, I reach out for it. I knock it down, and my finger is still bent.
Yeah, no, I believe it. Well,
before you cut me off, I saw you in at the Riverside, the North Riverside Players.
Oh, you did?
Oh, are you kidding? And it was.
Yeah. I did.
And then there were none.
Oh, you saw that one.
50.
Yeah, very good.
I saw that. It was excellent. I enjoyed you.
Oh.
And I'm going to tell you something. You got one hell of a handshake, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming to the show. In fact, I'm doing another show there that will be at the end of this month. We're doing Arthur Miller's The Crucible.
I got to call my brother. We both went. Yeah,
yeah, it's September 28th, 29th, and October 4th, 5th, and 6th. So the last weekend of September and the first weekend of October. We're doing The Crucible, only 6 shows, but that's the great Arthur Miller Tony Award-winning show that is about the Salem witch trials, and I'm playing Judge Danforth. So I'm the guy that's going to I'm going to be hanging those people high over the town.
North Riverside Players.com and NRP or something like that?
Yes, it is. It's NRP or NRPlayers.com. NRPlayers.com.
Okay, I don't have a computer, but my brother does. Yeah.
Well, the information was there for the phone.
I just happened to wake up for one of my 86-year-old pit calls here in the middle of the night, and there you were. I said, oh, my God. Yeah.
Oh, well, very good. I thank you so much, Jim. You got a great name, and you got a great attitude, and I appreciate you calling. And thanks again for your loyalty. Yeah, so in fact, I'm just going to give myself a nice little plug there. Yeah, if you're interested, I'm doing a play in North Riverside. Go to nrplayers.com. We're doing Arthur Miller's The Crucible about the Salem witch trials. Interesting, fun, not fun, interesting, very dramatic, and very relevant play, even though it was written in 1953, and kind of an allegorical play also about the McCarthy Commission and the un-American trials, where people were asked to if they were communists, and they were asked to give names of people that they knew were communists, and Arthur Miller equated what was going on in 1692 with what was going on at the time in 1953. And but the irony is, in 2018, a lot of what is going on today, this play speaks to as well. So it's a great play.
I didn't even know about that. So I knew the play because my sister was one of the witches in it.
Oh, really?
In
was
my
she?
School, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And I didn't know that connection. I never read the play. I haven't seen it since I was 12 or something.
Right.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah, there's a great movie version that came out in the mid-90s with Daniel Day-Lewis and Winona Ryder, which Arthur Miller also wrote the screenplay for. But yeah, that was kind of the impetus. He came before the McCarthy commission, and he did not name names, and he was sentenced. His sentence was later dropped. But he did not name names, and that's kind of the famous line in the play. One of the lead characters, John Proctor, says, "Give me my name. I cannot give my name. All I have is my name." And it's all about naming names. And once again, that's where the allegory comes in. It's not completely that, but it was written at the same time, and it was there to sort of send a message, like, "Hey, look what's happening. This silliness in 1692." About people thinking that there were witches, and we all look back at that now and say how crazy that was, and there was this hysteria going on. And at the time in 1953, it was, what's going on now, folks? And so, that's why the play still remains, as I said, relevant and very dramatic. I'm having a ball in rehearsals, and I'm looking forward to doing the show. September 28th, 29th, and October 4th, 5th, and 6th. Go to nrplayers.com. If you'd like to get tickets, you can either call in or buy them online. It is, about 1:49 here at WGN 720 AM. I'm Elton Jim Toronto in the midst of a Labor Day Elton Jim Toronto-thon. But I'm not asking for any donations, so don't worry about that. I'm just asking for your time and your alertness. Stay up with me until 5 a.m. Elton Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM. Filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 a.m. Hope you will stay with us through the duration. Hey, I'm staying up until 5 on Labor Day. Why can't you? Right? What are you doing? You're not working today. Are you? I don't know. I mean, this is an interesting time of the morning. We may have some third shifters that are either getting home or some people that might be going to work. It is an interesting work world that we are in now as we celebrate Labor Day. We celebrate work and the labor movement here in the United States. And the working man and working woman that keep this thing we call the USA moving. And yeah, it is an interesting world. There used to be a 9-to-5 world. There's no question about that. And nowadays, especially with all the connectivity that we have, we are either connected to our jobs for certainly more than 8 hours and sometimes like 12. And sadly, sometimes we're expected to be connected to our jobs. In fact, I was reading something in the paper a few weeks ago about something called the 30-day challenge, and the whole idea was to try to get a little less connected to your iPhone and your job so that you can get a little balance of life and work. And the whole idea was for 30 days to stop work at 5 o'clock and turn your phone off and tell people don't check email after 5 and tell people that you will not have your phone on until 7 or 6 in the morning and try to make a concerted effort to be a little less connected and enjoy a little more of your personal life. And now, as I've said many times, I've got a flip phone. that's how connected I am. So, I am certainly not connected to my iPhone because I don't have one. I have a Samsung flip phone, and I sometimes text. In fact, yeah, I've got a text that where I have to hit the button like 3 times for each number to get the letter. That's where I'm at. So this doesn't really apply to me, but I know there's some people that are suddenly, finding that their spines and their necks are curved because their heads are down so much. And as I said, many jobs and workplaces expect you to be almost on call 24 hours. And you know, that's all well and good. And a lot of people work from home now. There's a lot of flexibility in that. I understand that. But, yeah, I mean, we've come a long way from, you know, it seems like, think about it. The whole idea of Labor Day was to celebrate the labor movement, which in the late 1800s began to work for workers' rights. There was, of course, the sweatshops. And there were underage, there were children working in factories, and there was not a lot of safety regulations. I mean, the workplace was a, at times, very treacherous kind of place to go. As I said before, health and safety and the hours that you were there and lunch breaks and all that. You talk about quality of life. It wasn't like that. We're very spoiled today. But what is ironic is that when you think about it, so the labor movement in the 1800s worked very hard to begin to get some workers' rights and to improve the work situation for people, especially in this country, in factories, where this country began to take off as an industrial power. But at the same time, here we are in 2018, and while we may not be working in sweatshops, we may not have unsafe environments to work in and things like that, thanks to the labor movement. But at the same time, we're almost back to that 12, 13-hour workday again. We're coming full circle again. What happened, folks? The whole idea was to have a job and then have a life. And now those two seem to be melding together. And a lot of times that's not a good thing. But for whatever reason, enjoy your day off today, at least. I hope you turn your email off, your work email off, and your cell phone, your work texts and your work cell phones off, and enjoy the Labor Day weekend. And welcome to Labor Day. As I said, let me be among the first to wish you a happy Labor Day. And, yeah, this is one of those, as I said, it's kind of, even though the weather outside doesn't really show it, still warm. It was. It got a little cooler on my way down here about 11:30 in the morning or in the evening. But wow, during the day it was muggy. It's still supposed to be muggy, and we're going to be into the mid 80s at least, I think, until the early part of this week. So it's still a while. We're still going to, even though the calendar is saying it's September. Somebody needs to tell the jet stream, and that warm Gulf air that Tom Skilling always talks about moving up. We're not getting the Canadian air coming down. We're still getting that Gulf air coming up. But, wow, think about it. It is already September. I do remember June 1st. I do remember June 1st. Do you remember June 1st?
Yeah, because that's my birthday month. Oh.
Okay. Look at how fast that went.
Yeah.
I even make a joke. When it's June 1st, I say summer's over. That's how fast it goes. But, yeah, so anyway, after we're going to go to the news in a couple of minutes. And after that, as I said, I wanted to talk about some jobs. Here we are talking about Labor Day. But we can lighten up the mood a little and talk about maybe some of your first jobs or your worst jobs. And I'll share mine. And producer tonight, Elif, will be sharing some of her first jobs or worst jobs as well. Before we get to the news real quick here, let me take a quick phone call. I'm doing a play called The Crucible at the end of this month. And I was talking about how the play itself, The Crucible, was written by Arthur Miller in 1953. And it's an allegory, in some respects, for, at the time, the McCarthy hearings in the 1950s, where there was supposedly our government was infiltrated with communists and we were on a witch hunt for communists. And that's why he wrote the play about the Salem witch hunts in 1692 and how it was very similar in 1953. And Bill's got something to say about that. How you doing? Good morning, Bill.
Yeah, Jim. I stumbled on Saturday. I was out and I came in. I turned my TV on and I switched over to the Smithsonian Channel on my cable. Uh-huh. And they were covering history of the United States. And I picked it up when I got into it. They were just covering the Dempsey-Tunney fight. And it showed the long count. And now right. All the stuff was original film and soundtrack. And I watched it all the way through until, probably into the mid-60s. And I had to go do something else. It went through the Civil Rights stuff, World War II,
right.
Truman threatened to federalize the railroad workers when they wanted to strike in 1948, or no, the, you know, in the 40s, the railroad was going to call a national strike, and he said they'll federalize the troops to
right.
keep the trains moving.
Right.
It was really, it was all original stuff, and I'd never seen it before, but it was if anybody has a Smithsonian Channel, you might want to check. They might replay it.
Oh, that sounds cool.
But it was really, and it, you know, they covered the McCarthy hearings also.
Yeah, yeah.
All that stuff. But it was really
interesting,
interesting show. And I watched it for about, oh, maybe 6 hours.
Wow. Wow, you did. You got into it, huh? Wow, good
oh,
for
yeah.
you.
But once I got started on it, I couldn't quit. Like, you know, you'd sit there and say, oh, I remember where I was.
Right.
When they declared war on in Korea.
Exactly.
I was laying on the couch. I was 1951. I was about 9 years old.
Wow.
I said I was laying on the couch. I remember my mother saying, "Oh no, another war."
Yeah, here we go again.
Yeah, here we go again.
No kidding.
Like that, so.
Well, thank you, Bill. The Smithsonian Channel for some really cool historical stuff. No doubt about that. I love those history and those old newsreels. Interesting stuff. I'm Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. It's about 2:01 after the news. As I said, we'll talk about some jobs. What was your first job? What was your worst job? Ah, yes. Snow White and the Seven Little People. I mean, I don't know. Is it politically correct to say Seven Dwarves anymore? I don't know. They'd have to change the name of that. So this is the Seven Little People singing, "Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go," as we celebrate the working man and working woman of this United States of America on this Labor Day. Elton Jim Tirano with you this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Happy Labor Day. Kicking back, hopefully. Hope you have the day off. That's a great, isn't that an interesting kind of ironic moment? So we celebrate Labor Day, and then we don't work. Oh, anything for a day off in this country. And I, you know, the sad part is you read so many stories that, gosh, so many people leave so many vacation days on the books as well. They don't take their full vacation. Oh, my gosh. In Europe, my gosh, they get like 6 weeks off. And believe me, the people in Europe take every one of those 6 weeks off.
I was just in Turkey with my family.
Turkey.
Yes.
I've been to Turkey.
Yeah, you have. It's beautiful.
Istanbul.
And it was my first time being there in 3 years to see them. And the second thing out of my dad's mouth after I landed and met him was, I can't believe you got 2 weeks off.
No kidding. I mean, in Europe. Now, is Turkey, I don't mean to sound ignorant here. Is Turkey considered the Middle East?
Yes and no.
Because I just found out, I took one of those ancestry DNA tests.
Uh-huh.
And I just found out that I'm like 10% Middle Eastern.
Well, do you know what countries?
Well, I'm trying to think. I can't remember. I could actually probably look it up on the, because it they what did they call it?
Oh, hold on.
You know what I'm talking about? The it's not Caucasian, obviously. But there's
Caucasia?
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm going to Google it now.
Yeah. But I found out. I mean, my last name is Tirano. Obviously, that's Italian. My mother was Polish. And she thought, you know, all Polish, which I'm sure she was. Her maiden name was Kielbasa, which is very fitting because this weekend, of course, on Labor Day is always the Taste of Polonia at the Copernicus Center on Milwaukee and Lawrence, where you can get your fill of kielbasa as well as pierogi and all the other Polish delicacies. Yeah, Taste of Polonia, I go there quite often. My mom was a tireless volunteer. She was very active in the Polish community here in Chicago. And she was a tireless volunteer for all things Polish in this city. She was a member of many civic clubs, and she was always working at the Taste of Polonia four-day event, always at the Copernicus Center. She lived at the Copernicus Center. I grew up and we lived not far from there on the northwest side near the Six Corners neighborhood, so it's right there in near Milwaukee and in Lawrence. So if you want to go today, it is open today on Labor Day, last day. It started on Friday, Taste of Polonia. But so my mom, so I always told I was half Italian and half Polish. So you'd think 50-50, but when I got the DNA test back, it was pretty close to that. I was 42% Italian and 40% Polish, and then there was this like 18% that was broken down, but 10% of the 18, there was 1% of Britain and 2% of, and 3% Jewish, which surprised me. Hokus, now I know why I can talk like this and I know what I'm talking about. But yeah, I found out I was like 10% Middle Eastern, which totally, now what's that word?
Caucasus.
Yes, that is it. And what does that entail?
That you're Caucasian.
Well, I know that. Then that can't be right.
Oh, and of European origin.
Okay. Well, this said Middle Eastern though, so maybe it's another word. I can go on my account maybe and find it out. But
are you talking about Kazakhstan?
No. But it said Middle Eastern. It said Middle, which really shocked me. But now, but when you look at a map, it's not that surprising, because if I'm Italian, I would assume that Middle Eastern side is from my Italian side, because Italy is not far from the Middle
right.
East.
Right, that's what I was thinking when you said that.
So if there was some kind of migration one way or the other, because in fact, when we went to Istanbul in Terke, is the way our guide said it, Terke, we went on a trip throughout the Mediterranean, and we stopped in Istanbul as part of the cruise. I would think that my my Middle Eastern heritage, whatever it may be, 10%, is certainly probably on my Italian side, since it's right in that same Mediterranean area there. Were you born in Turkey or were you born here?
I was born in England.
You're born in England.
I'm 100% Turkish.
So you are. Does that make you an English citizen?
I was one, and I think my citizenship is gone now. I'm a Turkish citizen and American citizen.
Oh my gosh! Listen to you. You are quite the international mutt. You're all over the place. Born in England, 100% Turkish, and living in America.
Yeah.
Wow. You are like one big, 21st century diversity map.
I guess. I don't know. I guess. Yeah.
So were you in Istanbul or where were you at in Turkey when you went?
I started in Istanbul to see my dad, and then I went to Bodrum, which is it's right where the Aegean meets the Mediterranean Sea. Mm. So we just a bunch of swimming in the sea with my family, having dinners and breakfasts, and it was wonderful. Cool. And then I went back to Istanbul to see my dad again.
Nice.
And then came back here.
Very nice. Very cool. So, as we were saying here, I love getting sidetracked. I don't mind it at all. But we were talking about, as I said after the break, I wanted to talk about on this Labor Day, first jobs or worst jobs. And before I tell you about some of mine, and Elif will be sharing some of hers, let's go right to the phones here, because Robert's got one. How you doing there? Good morning, Robert.
Hey, you mentioned kielbasa.
Yes.
Those were the kids that I used to swim with at the YMCA. In Oak Park.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
There was a kielbasa family?
Oh, yeah, there was. Oh,
really?
Yeah, a bunch of boys, and yeah, what a great, so
interesting.
Very competitive family.
I don't think they were related. I don't remember any
I
kind
just
of.
Thought I'd throw
yeah,
it.
No, no, that's interesting. I'm just trying to think. I don't remember growing up any Oak Park kielbasas, if you will. In fact, my mom was, like I said, she was born here, but she spoke Polish, she wrote Polish, she was very proud to be Polish, and you know, that means sausage, and so my dad used to joke and call her Lori Sausage. That was her nickname. But anyway, we're talking about jobs here, Robert. What was your first job?
My grandfather gave me a lawnmower because I wanted a Schwinn banana bike.
Oh, with the banana seat, yeah.
Yeah, and he said, here's a lawnmower, start ringing doorbells,
right,
and go make your own money.
Now think about that, Rob, because yeah, I mean I used to do that too. I had my first job, where I got a paycheck and had...
I delivered Tribune newspapers.
Oh, you did? Okay, cool. Yeah, I remember. I never did that. My first job was at Jewel, but now that I think about it, when you say that, really, if you think about it, my first job was probably like you. I used to cut my lawn, and I didn't get paid for that. It was just part of my chores, but then... I did cut a couple of lawns in the neighborhood, the next door neighbor and a couple of people down from there. So that that would be a job. So that way, that actually may have been my first job, was cutting the grass.
Yes, I cut 27 lawns.
What, 27?
27 lawns to the age of about 12. Then then in the summertime, we go up to Michigan, to Sawyer, Michigan, and I worked for a gentleman who grew tomatoes. Non-acid tomatoes for Campbell Soup Company.
Oh,
Mr.
My
Ott. Mr. Ott put me in the field and taught me, you know, what a hard day's work is.
Yeah, I could imagine. So did you have to pick the tomatoes?
Oh, yeah. You had to pick the tomatoes.
So when you were cutting, you had 27 lawns in your neighborhood that you cut, you said, right?
Yes.
So how much did you get? I don't want to, you know, to say what.
I can't, you know, I'm 60 years old, and I grew up in the 60s and 70s, I'm lucky to know my name right now.
But
so.
I would assume, I mean, I remember, I grew up
I don't know,
in the,
like a buck, maybe a buck.
Oh, wow, you only got a buck? Oh, poor.
Something like that.
Oh, poor. No wonder why you needed 27 lawns to get that bike. Then you cut them, and I assume you cut them every week then, right?
Cut them every week, but, you know, I made enough money to not only buy my first Schwinn bicycle, but I also bought a Honda 70.
Nice. Wow.
Well, Honda 70.
No question about it. You were a get-goer. Yeah, I think I remember it was probably the late 70s when I started cutting grass in the neighborhood. As I said, I didn't have 27 lawns. But I think I may have gotten about somewhere between $5 and $10.
Well, that's in the 70s.
Yeah.
It taught me, you know, again, that owning your own business, and now I own many of them, that hard work pays off.
Oh, definitely. So how old were you when you were able to finally buy that bike after the money that you earned from cutting grass? How old were you when you bought that bike?
I think I was eight and a half.
I mean, wow, that is amazing. Think of that. I mean, at 8 years old, you were out there with responsibility. You knew you had to cut this grass. It had to look good. You had to make sure that it was cut on a weekly basis because, it, you know, especially in the summer, it's growing. You had to, you know, go there and do it and paid. And then that had to be an amazing feeling for you when you saved up enough money to go to that store and buy that bike because you knew that the sweat and the effort that went into that bike, I'm sure you loved that bike.
Oh, without a doubt. I still have a couple of my Schwinn Continentals. So
yeah, but I mean that had to have been a great, not only a teaching moment, but it's also a personal moment because you earned that thing.
Yeah, but it teaches you the circle of life. Now I live in a nice small little home in Oak Brook on 2.5 acres of lawn, and guess who has to cut the lawn every day?
With a push mower.
Don't you
hire someone? There's so many.
No. My neighbors think I'm nuts, and I told them my wife got me one of those little counters that tells you how many miles. My lawn is 14 and a half miles.
Oh my gosh!
It takes me 3.5 hours.
And you cut that with a push mower?
Well, yeah, you know, a Toro.
Oh,
you know,
yeah, but it's electric, right?
No, I mean it's a gas-powered,
Wait,
rewind. 14 and a half miles?
Miles.
Yeah, now, you got to remember, I'm on 2.5 acres.
Yeah.
So, and my home is a small, I live on in a small little ranch, two-bedroom, two-bath little ranch.
So how many?
Wait a minute. Why do you?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just so confused. How can you live on 14 and a half miles of land?
He's going back and forth, so that's count. You know, that's four. It's not four.
My wife got me one of those counters that you put on your hip.
He's walking 14 miles, but you know, but his land is not 14 miles.
I mean,
yeah, well, think about it. 2.5 acres is about 6 or 7 football fields. My front lawn is huge.
Yeah, you don't have a lawn. You've got an estate there. You've got a farm.
I worked hard.
Oh, yeah, no.
I always worked hard. You guys are working today. I'm up at 2 in the morning, and I'm working.
Well, I can't believe at this point you're 60 years old. Robert, would you please get one of those services? It'll take them 10 minutes. They have those nice standing mowers. It takes them 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that. My next-door neighbor just bought a $14 million car, okay? I have very well-to-do neighbors.
Yeah, right.
And they all think that I'm nuts, that I don't.
Hey, well, good for you.
I work 15, 16 hours a day, every day. Hey. Even when I'm on vacation, I'm working.
Well, good for you, Robert. I mean, that's you have.
And those are work ethics that
right.
are very lacking in today's society.
Yeah, you obviously were raised with a very strong work ethic, and it has certainly paid off for you in your life and in the long run. And congratulations. And you're a better man than I am, because I certainly wouldn't be cutting that grass. That's for sure. Wow, Robert, good for you. Happy Labor Day. Take the day off today, Robert.
You know what I would be doing if I were in a situation like that? I'd get in my car and I'd take the lawnmower and just drag it really fast.
That's not a bad idea. Instead of buying one of those riding mowers, just put the lawnmower on the back of the car.
Yeah, because it's less money.
And drive the car. Two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
Nice. Good idea. See
and then you gain mileage too. So there's that too.
Oh, I remember when we moved into our home, the day we moved in, as the movers are moving things into the house, all of a sudden this truck pulls up, and these guys jump out, and they start cutting the grass. And I'm like, hey, who are you? And they said, oh, well, we're the grass service. And I said, well, you know, I just bought the house here, so, you know, the woman that we bought it from must not have canceled you, but... You know, what are you doing? I mean, they couldn't see that there was a movers. I mean, obviously, this guy should have said, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't cut the grass, you know. But he starts cutting the grass, so I stopped him, and then I said, and this was 20 years ago, and I said, well, how much do you charge? And he says, $15 bucks. I was like, cut away.
Yeah, right.
Continue to cut. Cut away.
Right.
For 50. If you're going to cut my grass for $15, I have a pretty big yard. I'm like, go on. Go and do it. So, Roger, I certainly don't have your work ethic. Elif here, the producer, she's already finding ways to beat the system. She's tying lawnmowers onto the back of cars. That's how I think I'm lazy. I mean, I'm throwing money at it, but she's not even thinking. I mean, she's concocting... crazy inventions here. But, there's no doubt that the work ethic from 40-some years ago to today, we are a completely different society. And it's not anybody's fault, really. We have just changed in terms of technology. We've changed in terms of our perspectives on things. And you can certainly debate whether it's good, bad, or somewhere in the middle. But as I said before, that work ethic certainly has done a nice job for Robert there. I mean, my gosh, but my God, he's still cutting the grass. I am so tired of shoveling. Oh, I cannot stand shoveling, but I don't pay someone to do it. I do shovel. I don't cut the grass because that grows every week, and that's a pain. And it doesn't snow every day, so I'll still shovel. But I think how many years I've been shoveling snow. My dad had a heart attack when I was about 10. So I've been shoveling snow for many, many years, because after he had the heart attack, I started shoveling the snow. And so I've been shoveling snow for a long time, and it is not fun. But the grass is a pain in the butt just because it grows every week. Now, this year, the grass has hardly grown at all. I mean, my gosh, there's hardly any rain. If you cut the grass for the last couple of months, it might be just out of habit. You certainly didn't have to. Now it's supposed to be raining a lot this week, but... My gosh, yeah, I didn't really water a lot this year, which I probably should have, so the grass looked a little yellow, but you didn't really need to cut the grass too many times this year if you didn't want to. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. A Labor Day special today at 1 on WGN-TV. This is WGN Radio, 720 AM. I am Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 AM. We have been talking about different jobs and different work ethics as we celebrate Labor Day. As Labor Day is, of course, is the holiday that that commemorates and celebrates the working man, the working woman here in the United States of America. And the labor, it started as a celebration and an acknowledgement of the labor movement in the late 1800s, as suddenly working conditions were getting to get a little better for the average worker in terms of safety and hours and workers' rights and things like that. And here we are in 2018, and we are still fighting for some of those rights. And as I said, many of our working habits are self-inflicted. Excuse me. First, it was the job to work 12 or 13 hours a day, and now, thanks to this connectivity and our iPhones and computers and emails and texts and everything else, many people are expected to be on call 24 hours a day or be connected 12 hours a day. And while you're sitting and relaxing at home at 9 o'clock, suddenly, boom, here comes a text, here comes an email, and you're off to the races again. So it's funny how we've almost come full circle. We used to work in a sweatshop, and we were forced to, and now we have almost volunteered to work 12 hours a day in some cases. But it is Labor Day, and we will continue throughout the show to talk about different jobs, as I said, first jobs or worst jobs, and I'll talk a little about some of mine. As I said, Elif, our producer tonight, will be chiming in with some of those. But after the news at 2:30, what I do want to talk about, I'm very excited, as you would expect. My nickname is Elton Jim, and obviously I must be a fan of Elton John. And if you followed me with any regularity, you certainly know that's a fact. I have attended 177 Elton John concerts, and I'm looking forward to number 178 this week. On Saturday, I'm going to be going to Allentown, Pennsylvania, as the first or the opening night show of Elton John's Farewell Yellow Brick Road, his final tour, which is it's a long goodbye. He's planning on touring for 3 years to say goodbye. That the official first show of that tour begins in Pennsylvania, Allentown, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, September 8th. And to give a little preview of that show, as well as for those of you who may be going to see Elton when he comes here to Chicago at the end of October, and October 26th and 27th, at the United Center, we'll be talking to a friend of mine as well. He's a friend as well as a very noted Elton John fan, and he may have a little insight as to what this tour will be all about. So we will be talking about that. And as I said, if you have some tickets for the show here in either October at the United Center, or, as I said, it's a long goodbye, then he'll be back in February at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont. So he's saying goodbye, wow. But it's a long wave.
Yeah.
It's a long wave, and I'm sure he'll be back again, because this tour is supposed to end in 2021, and I guarantee you he'll be back in Chicago before then. But I'm excited just to see what this tour is going to be like. It's supposed to have a big production values, and obviously he'll be interested in the set list and everything like that. So we'll be talking a little bit about that with a friend of mine, Wayne Martin, right after the news at 2:30. As I said, we'll be taking a quick break, but right now we will go to the news, and we still have Roger, right? Good old Roger. What a guy. So goodbye, yellow brick road, where the dark clouds of society howl. You can't let me in your penthouse. I'm going back to my plow, back to the howling of owls. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM in Chicago. Also known as Elton Jim. And why not? I've been a fan of Elton John's, geez, since I was about 9 years old. No lie. So it's been a long time. And as I said, I've been to about 177 Elton John concerts, from one coast of this country to the other, and across the ocean, across the Atlantic. And so I've seen him in a few foreign countries throughout England, and even once in Prague, of all places. Beautiful city, Prague. Loved Prague. On the phone with me from the Boston area, I should say, is a friend of mine, as well as, I would say, one of the most knowledgeable and noteworthy Elton John fans, certainly in this country, if not in the world. And I say that with all due respect, not just because he's a friend of mine, but because, believe me, I've sat down and talked to this guy, and we have been friends for, wow, over 20 years now. And if you think I'm a fan, wait till you talk to my guest right here, Wayne Martin. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure. It's great to talk to you. I was just telling my wife that in years past, you and I would be up at this hour watching the telethon right. with Jerry Lewis, and we'd either be phoning each other, faxing, email, or texting, depending on the year. So, yeah.
Well, I started the show with a clip from the 1985 the opening of the 1985 Jerry Lewis Muscular Dystrophy Telethon, at that time was called the Super Show, live from Caesar's Palace. And Ed McMahon read this litany of names, and I would say, this was 1985, I would say 85% of them are all dead now.
I'm sure.
Although I think Norm Crosby is still alive.
Still hanging in there.
Yeah, him and Wayne Newton, still alive. But
no, I mean, Labor Day is not the same.
No.
You know, we've talked about this in the past. It's just like, you know, the last several years since, you know, Jerry left, and now, of course, he's gone. But, you know, it's just not the same.
No.
So I'm glad you asked me to do this. Gave me something to do on my Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm calling this an Elton Jim Toronto-thon. Just
okay.
in keeping in the tradition of Jerry, and who knows, as I've said, I did a promo for this show through the week. In about 2 hours, you never know, I might just pull out "You'll Never Walk Alone."
Yeah.
And I'm deciding whether I will.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm not. I'm deciding at this point whether I will have Jerry singing it, or if I will sing it when you walk. Through a storm.
Yeah, we ought to put together a whole montage of all the years, you know, just a little bits and pieces of the song from each year.
Yeah, oh, no kidding. But I love what, I mean, the best part when Jerry would sing, you know, when "You'll Never Walk Alone," "You'll never," and then he would just drop the mic.
Yeah.
Some years he would just drop the mic. Other years he would place it on the stool and walk off. But it was it was just odd. I mean, he was, you know, as I said at the top of the show, you can say what you want about Jerry Lewis, and there's no doubt he's a polarizing character. He had a lot of tough opinions. He was not a politically correct guy at all. He was certainly a man of his time, but you cannot deny his talent. He was probably one of the best entertainers of the 20th century, with not only himself but Dean Martin.
Dean, yeah.
But you cannot, whether you like the guy or not, whether you thought he was cheesy, whether you thought he was misogynistic, whatever you may thought about Jerry Lewis, you cannot deny the work that he did for muscular dystrophy.
Oh, yeah.
And the awareness he brought for that disease. And I think he raised, over his career with those telethons over 50, 60 years, over $2 billion. That is an amazing amount of money. And to your point, which is exactly correct, not only is it not the same without the Jerry Lewis telethon, because you had that whole day off and there was nothing better to do than just to watch.
Yeah.
But think about this. Since Jerry was removed as the chairman and was not in the telethons anymore, do you ever hear about MDA anymore?
No, and, you know, and I think they did it, what, 2, possibly 3 years after they pushed him out.
Right.
And they didn't even give a tote, you know, total.
Right, no.
Yeah,
no,
because
they knew.
They weren't raising nearly what they did with Jerry.
And especially so, today, when there are so many, you know, charities fighting for the small pool of people's ability to give to charities, and MDA was always so prominent. And now, I mean, I wonder, is there even a Muscular Dystrophy Association anymore?
Man, I'm sure there is, but you sure don't hear about it.
No.
That's for sure.
But it is so true. As I said, I met Wayne Martin here, who, as I said, is a noted Elton John fan, as well as an entertainer in his own right, one of the country's foremost puppeteers. You've been puppeteering for how long now, Wayne?
I started when I was 3 and a half, and I went professional when I was 8.
Oh, my God. Three and a half?
Yeah. I saw my mentor, a man who became my mentor. His name was Larry Smith, and he passed away earlier this year. And I saw him on television when I was 3 years old. And
you were manipulating. So you manipulated because you do marionettes. Were you manipulating marionettes, or were you doing just little puppets with your hands?
I started off with hand puppets.
Oh, okay, good.
Probably for the first 8 years or so, it was all hand puppets, and then I got into marionettes.
Yeah,
I watched him on TV, and I just started, you know, anything I could turn into a puppet, I would, and act out the different TV shows. And then I met Larry when I was 4, and just started following him around. My parents would take me, because he had his own TV show, but then he would do personal appearances on the weekend.
And that was in Cincinnati.
Yeah. And I would go, you know, see him as many times as I could. And over, you know, within a short period of time, he began to recognize me. And like I said, he became my mentor. And I went professional when I was 8. And then when I turned 10, he started recommending me for shows, all the stuff that he didn't want to do, you know. But that's when my career really started to take off, you know. But I was a 10-year-old kid.
That's amazing.
He's handing me all these these things. I just got back from Cincinnati for the Regional Emmy Awards, and like I said, Larry passed away earlier this year, and posthumously they awarded him the Gold Circle Award, which is the highest honor that the Emmys can bestow. And so I flew into Cincinnati for that ceremony and accepted it on behalf of his memory and his family. So.
And then a few years after that, I remember at the same time when you were 10, you were probably becoming an Elton John fan.
Yeah, it was 1970 when, it was in the spring of 1970, and I had just turned 12 years old, and I had my cousin was on leave. He had just come back from Vietnam, and he was into very heavy progressive rock music, and I was much more bubblegum and pop and that at that
age.
Oh,
yeah, everybody is,
and,
right.
Yeah, and so anyway, he would be playing all this music, you know, when I'd get up in the mornings, and I didn't care for most of it. And one day I walked out into the living room, and there was a song on that just stopped me in my tracks. And he started laughing, and he said, "You like that one, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And it turned out it was Border Song, which was his very first single.
Yeah.
And to make a very long story short, over the next 2 years, I had no idea who he was, but I just, the songs that attracted me, from Your Song to, you know, Tiny Dancer to Leave On, just all these songs that came out, and he put out, you know, it was like 5 albums or more in just that 18 to 24 month period, which is unheard of today. But I had a choir teacher, and I walked in one day, and Leave On was playing. He'd always be playing a record when we'd walk in the room.
Yeah.
And that was a religious experience to me. And I said, "Who is that?" And he said, "That's the guy you like." And I said, "Who's that?" And he said, "Elton John." I said, "Well, who the hell's Elton John?"
Right.
And he said, "All the songs, your favorite songs in our choir book," he said, "are Elton John songs."
Yeah,
and I said, "Oh, wow, okay." And so I immediately went to the store that night and bought my first Elton John album, and I would go in every Friday for the next 4 or 5 weeks, and I would buy another album of his, because my parents really frowned upon you paying money for albums. You didn't do that. You listened to the radio.
Right.
But I was already working, and so I had my own spending money. But
you've been working since you were 3.
Yeah. So, you know, I had the money, but I knew they would throw a fit if they knew I was. So I would bring in one album a week so they wouldn't hear all this new music all at once, you know. And, so that's the way it started for me. And, you know, I've just been a rabid Elton John fan ever since.
Yeah, well, Wayne and I, now, did we meet in 93 or 94?
It was spring of 93.
93, right. We met in Boston.
Uh-huh.
And we were meeting with a group of people who were going to see him at the then Boston Garden, which now sadly is gone. And I remember being introduced to you, and I just remember there was a big group of people, so we didn't really hang out a lot. I remember,
yeah.
but we did seem to connect when we did.
Yeah, I just remember our mutual friend John Higgins told me he had already met you or at least spoken with you, and he said, there's somebody coming into town today. He said, I really want you to meet. He said, I think you guys are really going to hit it off. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like you said, there was a big group of us, and we all met at the hotel. And but we did. We hit it off right from the get-go and exchanged contact information, and like I said, back then it was faxes. We were sending faxes back and forth to each other all the time.
That's been one of the cool things about this entire kind of Elton John odyssey, or whatever you want to call it. Someone might call it a scary obsession, but I don't care. But that's been one of the cool things. Not only has, like you, I mean, we all have our, for those of us who are big fans of not just of Elton John, but if you're a fan of any kind of artist, you do have that kind of epiphany moment like you were talking about. And you do have, and everybody has their story of how they discovered that person, whether it's an actor or a songwriter or whatever in the arts. But the thing that has been really, from my standpoint, really most satisfying is not only has this Elton John, as I said, obsession, been a major part of my life, and it has enriched my life and really helped shape it in many ways. And part of that shaping is that I have been able to meet people like you and other people around the country and even around the world in other countries that I would never have met. There is no question you and I would never have met.
Exactly.
We never would have come to know each other. And aside from being and sharing this Elton John obsession that we have, and when we do get together, our wives just kind of roll their eyes and go off and do their own thing.
go off shopping.
Yeah,
and leave
because
us alone, yeah.
And we frequently will go out to Wayne's home with his wife, Marilyn. First, they used to live in Boston, and then they live in the outskirts. In Massachusetts, but when we go there for 2 or 3 days, I mean, it's just me and Wayne. Just we just get our Elton John jag on, and then the rest of it is whatever. Maybe sometimes there's food. Sometimes there's sleep.
Yeah, the wives come into the office and say it's time to go out and eat now. We've made reservations.
But I mean, but my point is that, and you have met many people as well, and we have shared a lot of those same people. But I mean, that's been one of the cool things.
You and a handful of others are my best friends, and it's all.
Yeah.
All connected to Elton John, and like you said, we never would have met. I remember when we did first meet, and it was amazing all of the places that you and I had been at the same time.
Right.
All these years, because we were both traveling all over the world.
Yeah, and you were from the Midwest. In fact, I know for sure that you, one of your first concerts and one of my first concerts of Elton's was at the Auditorium Theater.
Right
here
in
Chicago when he was in 79,
solo tour.
Yeah, and so once again we were in the same building and we had no idea. And as you said, we probably were a lot other times as well. But what has been is, as I said, to some an obsession has really been kind of a fun thing. I always say, and I would, and now I've been to, as I said, 177 Elton concerts. You have been to 100 and what?
This Saturday will be my 151st.
Right. So, and my will be, I'll be 178. We will see each other again in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I'm sure we will see each other, down the road as well. And we saw each other back in May for the final Million Dollar Piano Show.
Million Dollar Piano Shows, in
Vegas. And it really has been a fun time, and what's been really cool. I mean, yes, we have this obsession. We've shared this thing. We love the music. We admire the talent. We follow his antics on and off stage. But the other side of the coin is we have gone on vacations together with you. We have been to your house for holidays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I said,
and not just that, but when we travel individually, we've got friends in Australia, I've got friends in Germany, the UK, Scandinavia, and so when we travel to these places, not just to see Elton John, but we've got friends there
now, and
they can take us around and show us the sights and everything.
Yeah, it's been
it's all because of our obsession with Elton John.
Yeah, it's been very cool. As I said, at the end of the day, I say the great thing about following Elton in this way, whether it's an obsession or not, is it's gotten me off the couch.
Yeah.
It's gotten me off the couch and into the world. And, I mean, yeah. I never would have traveled as much as I did. And
I'm a puppeteer by trade, and like any artist, so many of us, we don't have anything else. We just have that, and because it's an obsession, and you know, it's our life, and so we spend all of our time with that. And the great thing with Elton, it's given me this whole other life away from the puppets, and I think that's why I've stayed in the business as long as I have. You know, one of the reasons, because I have had this other interest, and it's kept me from getting burned out on just being, you know, obsessed right. with just puppets.
Well, as I said, we are both looking, as well as Elton John fans all over the world, as I said, this Saturday, September 8th, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, will be mm-hmm. the kickoff of the much-heralded Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour, Elton's last tour. And we're going to take a quick break here. After the break, we'll continue to talk with Wayne Martin. And we'll be talk a little bit about that tour. There's not a lot that, I mean, they've done a pretty good job up to this point of keeping things under wraps.
Keep it quiet, yeah.
To what this, there's a lot of talk about the stage and the production values and the set list, and this is going to be such a grand kind of performance. There are a few things that we can discuss here that already has been, you know, released. And as I said, not only is the tour kicking off here, but for our Chicago listeners here at WGN, the Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour will be coming through Chicago on October 26th and 27th at the United Center. And then in February, on the 15th and 16th, in nearby Rosemont at the Allstate Arena. And I know that, you know, he'll be coming to your town near Boston in sometime in October, correct?
Yeah. Actually, twice. He's coming in October and then again in November. So,
Are you going to the New York shows?
Yeah, I've got tickets for all the New York shows.
Oh, I guess we're going to see each other in New York then.
Yep.
We'll see you October 18th and 19th.
Yeah, and I hope it's been so long since I've been to Chicago. I'm hoping I get to Chicago. I can't do it in October because of bookings of my own, but I'm hoping to get there in February.
Cool. Definitely. Yeah. We'll be back after this. We'll continue to talk to Wayne Martin as we talk about some little previews of the upcoming Farewell Yellow Brick Road, Elton John's final big tour of his career. I'm Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio. It's about 6 minutes to 3. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. WGN 720 AM. Speaking with Wayne Martin on the phone from the suburbs of Boston. We're talking about Elton John. Wayne is a noted and knowledgeable Elton John fan. I wanted to have him on as well as a good friend. And I wanted to have him on today because I wanted to talk a little Elton, because on Saturday, this coming Saturday, September 8th, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, his much-touted Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour, his final big tour. He will not stop performing live. He will not stop making music. He's still writing musicals. He still may make recording albums. But in terms of the big, huge tours that travel months at a time from city to city at one continuous time, those big tours, this will be the last one. He is 71 years old. He's got a couple of kids that are, 7 and 5, and he wants to spend time with them and take it easy. And so he is, announced that he is going to retire from touring on the big type of tours, but certainly will continue to perform. It's in his blood. I know he will. I mean, if health willing, I think he will play until he cannot play anymore. Don't you think, Wayne?
I mean, there's already planning. They're in the planning stages for residencies. You know, Vegas, he'll do another residency in Vegas. And there's also talk of doing a residency at the Beacon Theater in New York. And those will be really neat because those will be shows where it won't be greatest hit shows at the Beacon and in London, places like that. It'll be the album tracks and everything. So those will really be for the diehard fans.
Yeah, we have to do a break for news. But if you can you stick around?
Sure.
At the other side of the news, we'll continue to talk to Wayne Martin. And as I said, Wayne has seen Elton Homme as many times as I have, and certainly is one of the most knowledgeable Elton John fans I know. So, and he also has a few connections within the Elton John world. So hopefully you will, there has been some things that have been released about this tour. So if you do have tickets, as I said, Elton John coming to Chicago at the end of October and then again in February of 2019. So if you're wondering what is this show going to be like, we may be able to pass on some information and get the anticipation going. As I said, we will be seeing, we'll be on the road.
On opening night.
Yeah, so how do you, from the Boston area, how are you getting to Allentown?
We're driving over. I'm driving over with a friend, and we're actually going down a few days early because we're going to get into one of the rehearsals, and I'm also hoping to get over to the stage builder facility, which is why they're actually opening in Allentown, because the company that's built the stage is there, and they've got an incredible campus there, and like 96 acres where they build all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm really hoping that'll work out, but yeah, it'll be, you know, it'll be great. And
yeah, well, we will talk a little bit more about that then after the news here.
After the news, okay.
Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM. And we are talking with Wayne Martin here, noted. I mean, you think I'm an Elton John fan. I got another one here on the line that can certainly go toe-to-toe and maybe even more. Wayne Martin, calling. I appreciate you being up here, although you'd be up anyway, wouldn't you?
I'd be up anyway, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm nocturnal, so
yeah.
I usually don't go to bed till around 6-ish.
Well, that was one of the reasons. So, I was talking about how I met Wayne in 1993. We met through our mutual admiration of Elton John, and we've become very good friends over the last, 25 years now, when you think about it.
Yeah.
How scary is that? But that's the thing. When I was putting the show together, I wanted to talk about the Elton John tour coming up. As I said, opening night is Saturday of the Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour, Elton John's last big major tour of his career. As I said, opens this Saturday in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I will be going. Wayne will be going. And I think any Elton John fan worth his or her salt will be going. And but, I mean, what's so funny is that this is, you know, this kind of has become a thing where, as I said, friendships are built more than just sharing this. You know, friendships from around the world have been built. And that's what's always been interesting for me. And part of Wayne, I knew that Wayne would be up at this time. So when I was putting the show, when I was putting the show together, you know, this is an odd time. It's very difficult, obviously, to get guests because it's an ungodly hour. Unless you call somebody in Europe, then it's not bad because it's in the afternoon there. But I'm looking around. I don't like to pre-record a lot of interviews because I just like the show to be a little more urgent and immediate and intimate and of the moment. But when I'm looking around, I said, "Well, geez, I want to talk about this tour." Well, Wayne is going to be up. I mean, listen to his voice, folks. This does not sound like a guy who's tired.
That's right.
I mean, believe me, when we go and stay by Wayne's house, like I said, Wayne and I are up until 4 or 5. And then we go to sleep, and your whole body chemistry, when you stay over by Wayne's, your whole body chemistry changes. Because
it's okay with you because you've got weird hours too.
Yeah, right.
Other friends come and stay, you know, and we just warn them right off the bat. It's like, well, you're not going to see us till noon or later, because we're going to be up till 6.
Yeah, so. That's what I mean. So you go to bed at like 5, and then, you know, Wayne and his wife come strolling out of the bedroom at like 2 and welcome the day at 2 p.m. So everybody's clock is shifted, but it's always fun, as I said. So that's why I had no problems asking if Wayne would come on at this time, because I knew what the heck, he's going to be up anyway. And even when I came into the studio today, I was talking with Elif, who is the producer tonight, and she said, you know, that she was able to take a little nap, but because she works, she has a regular, you know, shift during the day. She produces for John Williams in the midday. And so this is a different time for her, and she's asked me, "Oh, you know, did you take a nap?" Or, you know, what did you do? And I said, you know what? If I wasn't doing this, I'd be watching Buzzer TV. I'd be watching Match Game reruns right now. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, I'd rather be doing this. But as I said, I knew that Wayne would be up here too. So I wanted to talk about, as I said, the some coming attractions of the tour. Not a lot has been released, but for those who are going to be going to the shows, and once again, WGN goes to many cities, and people are listening on the internet as well, but for the sake of our Chicago listeners, as I said, Elton's Farewell Yellow Brick Road Tour will be coming to Chicago on October 26th and 27th at the United Center, and then again in February of 2019, on February 15th and 16th. So what have you heard about what we may expect from this show?
Well, they've, like you said, they've been very tight-lipped about it, and the band had their first rehearsals, I believe it was back in March for this, and they rehearsed for a week or two, and then for the last couple of weeks they've been rehearsing out in Los Angeles, and then they flew into Pennsylvania this past week, and they've been there all week rehearsing on the stage itself, and everything will be transferred to the arena on, I believe it's Tuesday, they move, or it may be tomorrow. Anyway, they move the stage into the arena, and then Elton flies in on Wednesday, and we'll do 3 days of rehearsals with them. I personally think it's going to be a greatest hits tour. I mean, a lot of fans are thinking, you know, this is going to be a tour with all these rare tracks and B-sides, and there might be the odd song, like he always does, that, you know, isn't one of the major hits. But for a tour this big and of this kind, it has to be a greatest hits tour. So, you know, I'm not getting my hopes up for any rarities,
well, yeah, I mean,
per se.
Especially since not only is it, you know, a final tour, but, I mean, the tickets are very expensive.
Yeah.
And so people going to this, I mean, yes, there's people like us, and we'd love to hear these deep tracks or these obscure songs because we've heard Daniel and we've heard, you know, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me a million times. I never get tired of them, but at the same time, it's cool to hear some unknown songs. But
sure.
But this tour is not only for us, obviously. It is mostly for the casual fan who maybe has never seen Elton John, or who has seen him one or two times, hasn't seen him in 10 or 15 years, and here's your final chance. So to your point,
right,
I think you're exactly correct. There may be a couple of little surprises, but for the most part, I mean, if I was a casual fan and I paid $200 for a ticket and he didn't play Benny and the Jets, I would be upset.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
I would be upset. I mean, that is the responsibility and the obligation that he has.
Yeah, I pictured this show being, and again, I don't know because I've been very tight-lipped about it, but I do know there have been a number of videos that have been produced for this, and I know there's a documentary-like video that's going to be part of the show, and so what I'm envisioning is I think it's going to be kind of like the Red Piano was in Vegas, and not that you're going to have the blow-ups and all that kind of stuff, but it's going to be very high tech, and I think there's going to be a lot of video and a lot of lighting effects, and you know, again, the man's 71 years old, and so he's not going to be jumping around like he did 25 years ago, so you need that to, you know, to put on some kind of spectacle for the show, and I that's what I picture anyway.
I understand, and I even from the seating charts, when you're looking at the tickets, there does seem to be an overextended stage, so it looks like maybe the state, like you said, they're building the set. It looks like it may be a big, elaborate stage. Who knows if there's risers on it and things like they like he's used in the past. As you said, the use of video.
Well, I suggested that it should be hydraulics so that to save the man's energy, you know, they can wheel him out underneath the stage, sit him on the piano bench, and just raise the piano up through, you know.
Well,
because you got to worry about stuff like that. I mean, this, you know, he always does about 100 shows lives a year, and that's essentially what they're doing with this tour as well. It's going to be around 100 a year. But again, he's 71 years old, and the way that they're booked and how close together they are is
right,
different.
Yeah.
And it, you know, has to be a concern as far as watching out for his health.
The one, one thing that I have to say, though, and as I said, having seen him so many times, and especially over the last several years, having seen many shows, the one thing that that really still impresses me and amazes me, in fact, I went to my dentist the other day, and, you know, he said, oh, so I'm sure you're going to go see Elton John. I mean, everybody knows, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, yeah, I'm going to be going to one of the shows here in Chicago, too. Now, he hasn't seen, I don't think he's either ever seen Elton John perform, or he hasn't seen him in many, many years, as I said, which is, to me,
right,
the average kind of person who'll be going to this tour. And so he said to me, so, you know, I mean, is he still a good performer? You know, he asked me that. And I said to him, I said, I will tell you this, and I'm trying to be as unbiased as I can, which is difficult, but my view is, yeah, to your point, he is 71 years old, and when he walks out on the stage, and when he stands up from the piano to take a bow, or when he walks to the middle of the stage to take a bow, or when he turns around and takes a couple of steps to get a sip of water, he looks every bit, if not older than 71 years old, in terms he's got bad knees and he seems to have arthritis, he's kind of hunched over. But the amazing thing, and this is not exaggeration, and if you go to this show, I would ask people to keep an eye for this and say, ah, this is what he was talking about. Yes, he may look a little tired or he may look a little old when he's walking around and bowing, but when he sits down and starts playing that piano, he is 22 years old.
Yeah. The voice and everything is there, and the piano playing
is
just gets better. The piano playing is just what amazes me, that it, for somebody who's been doing it as long as he has and playing so many of the same songs night after night, and how he changes them every night. You know, people look at us like we're crazy because you and I all go to four or five shows in a row,
right,
you know, in a week and a half's time.
Right.
But it's like everyone's different. Yeah, it's the same set list, but there's not one of those shows that isn't different each night,
and
it's all the way he plays the piano, and you know, the things that he adds, and you know, you and I sit there and laugh because we can tell immediately if he's in a good mood or bad mood,
exactly.
You know, by how he's playing that night, but I mean, he absolutely amazes me. It just, you know, and you know, we talk about him being old and the arthritis and all that stuff, but still, he's got more energy than I do, and I'm 60.
Yeah, no. I mean, no. Like I said, I'm not making it sound like he's walking out in a wheelchair, but I'm just saying you will notice that as when you, sometimes he'll stand up, and I've seen him over the last several years where he's actually been very sick during the show, and he's had to muscle his way through it. And I was sitting close enough to hear him groan and scream and see the pain on his face. But once again, the ultimate professional and the ultimate performer just fought through it, and you could see at the same time he was still giving 120%. And
well, those are always the best shows because that's just it. I mean, because he especially in the piano playing, he'll just go out of his way to make up for it. And, you know, and it's always been that way. I mean, I remember back in 86 where he had all the throat problems and had lesions on his vocal cords, and he powered his way through that tour for over 9 months, you know, when the doctors told him, get off the road, have surgery now, and he said, no, I'm finishing this tour. And he went on for 9 months with that voice that, there were some nights where just nothing came out, and yet those were fantastic shows. You know,
like
I saw one of the shows in New York, he literally did not have a voice, you know, and he apologized to the audience. He said, you know, I'm going to stay on stage as long as I can tonight, but I've got no voice. And the audience sang the whole concert back to him. And,
well, and
it, you know,
And what's funny is that as you're saying, in 86, he had throat surgery to remove some nodules from his from his throat. One of his best live albums was recorded during that tour in Australia.
The final concert of that world tour.
And to me, his voice, it does sound rough. You could hear it, but the emotion and the energy, and just to your point, the bulldog, stubbornness of getting through that. His voice sounds amazing, even though it's may not be, the timbre may not be perfect, but the emotion and the sound and the power that he is exerting, that album is one of his best live albums.
I think it's one of the best live albums ever by anybody. I mean, the production of that and the performance, throughout, and the fact that it was all taken from the same night. The final night of that world tour,
and just
amazing.
And after a few months after that is when he had the surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, so that is amazing too. So
it was actually 3 weeks after
he
came off. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, the one thing I found interesting that I just read, his longtime drummer Nigel Olsen, and who knows if this is something that may come to fruition or not. There's always these kind of stories that that bound around and then they don't come true. But an interesting idea, as we were talking about what the set list may be, he certainly has to do his major hits. Now, what's interesting, I've always said about Elton John, he's got so many songs that people don't even realize it, that he does about 24 to 25, sometimes 26, 27 songs a night. And within that set list, he still does not play many songs that were top five or number one hits that other people would have to play as encores. He doesn't even play them. That's how deep his catalog is of just hits. Forget about deep tracks. And so one idea that I read that Nigel Olsen was that perhaps there actually may be two sets. If they do two nights in a row, there might be two different sets. It's an interesting idea. I wonder if that would happen.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
with a show
that's going to be as high tech as this, that I would think would be impossible to do. But, maybe they'll surprise us. You never know.
Yeah,
like I said,
you and me and about 5 million other fans, and certainly many people here. Chicago has always been a great market for Elton, always enthusiastic. I've met some many, many diehard fans that live right here in Chicago, as well as, I said, around the country, is around the world that I've met, and it's been a really cool opportunity. One of those is Wayne Martin from the Boston area, noted puppeteer in this country, as well as one of the most knowledgeable and enthusiastic Elton John fans around. And I am happy to call him and his wife my dear friends. And so we look forward to seeing you on Saturday as Elton John kicks off the farewell Yellow Brick Road tour in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Safe travels to you, Wayne, and we will see you on Saturday.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Okay, take care.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Bye-bye. That was Wayne Martin. We're talking Elton John as he gets ready to start his final tour, starting this Saturday, September 8th, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and he will be here in Chicago at the United Center to kick that off for the Chicago people on October 26th and 27th. And you could bet I will be there, and by that time it will be probably show number, 78, 79, 80 and 81. It'll be 180 and 181 by the time those two shows are done. So my goal is to hit 200 by the time this tour is over. We'll see if I can do it. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio here at WGN. It's about 3:24 in the morning. Thank you for staying up with me. We'll be back after this. This is WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. I am Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio on this Labor Day. Let me be among the first to wish you a happy Labor Day as we celebrate the working man and working women of this country. Here's a little fact. Did you know that Labor Day officially became a national holiday in 1894? 1894! Wow, That's a long time. I didn't think that Labor Day was around for that long, 1894. And here's a little factoid for you as well. Oregon was the first state to recognize Labor Day as a holiday before it became a national holiday. Oregon was the first state to recognize Labor Day. Now, we recognize Labor Day with hot dogs and Taste of Polonia here in Chicago, on Milwaukee and Lawrence, and cookouts and parties and the unofficial last day of summer. So I hope you're going to have some plans set for Labor Day. Hopefully the weather will accommodate those. It's supposed to rain maybe on and off. We'll see. But hopefully there'll be enough sunshine and some dry weather for you to enjoy the day. As I said, many people have already been going back to school, but a lot of, I think, the Chicago public schools go back on Tuesday. So, yeah, this is the official end of summer, even though, according to the weather reports I've seen, summer's going to be still sticking around with us for at least a couple more weeks. We'll see. I am not a warm weather fan. If you know me in any way, if you've listened to me either on my podcast or here on the radio, I am not a warm weather guy. So I'm actually happy to see, hopefully, summer leave, because this was a tough one. There were way too many 90-degree days for me. Ugh. I'm looking forward. I love 65 degrees. I just love wearing a nice little hoodie during the day, 50s at night, keep the windows open. Oh, it's not that far away. I'll just keep waiting for it. I'll just keep waiting for it. At the other side of the news, we will continue to talk about first jobs. I never got a chance to really talk about my first job. And my producer here tonight is Elif, and she will also be talking about one of her first jobs. And if you want to share, we've had a few people earlier in the show sharing some of their experience about their first jobs or your worst job. If there's one out there that you can remember, like, oh, my gosh, did I hate that one? Give me a call, 312-981-7200. That's also the text number, and you're welcome to text, and I appreciate a lot of people texting in today. But on the other side of the coin, this is an audio medium. So I'd love to hear your voice and love to share what you have to say on the radio with you. It's great reading it, but I'd love to talk to you. So once again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'm Jim Toronto, once again, filling in for Nick DiGilio. I'll be here till 5 a.m. Jim Toronto, working on the radio here at WGN 720, celebrating Labor Day and all that entails as we celebrate the working man and working woman. And hopefully, as I said, kind of funny, to celebrate the working man and working woman, we take a day off. And we've all had our first jobs or our worst jobs, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to share some of that. If you want to get into the conversation, 312-981-7200. You know, it's funny, before we go on, I could hear my voice getting a little scratchy. And I woke up this morning, and it was getting scratchy, and I was taking chloroseptic lozenges, and I wasn't talking very much during the day, and I was taking coldies in case I was getting a cold, and I've been drinking water. But now it's just, you know, you talk for 4 hours. But don't worry, fans. Unlike Bono in Berlin, I will not cancel the show. Did you hear about that? U2 was in Berlin the other night, I think last night. And five songs into their concert, Bono stops during It's a Beautiful Day and says, I can't sing.
That's intense.
I can't sing, and you can go on. I saw some people, obviously, were taking it from their phones, and it was on the news, so I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. But, yeah, so about five songs in, I think he was singing It's a Beautiful Day, and he was kind of trying to get through the song, and he started talk singing, you know how that is. And then he just stopped the band and said, I apologize, but I just have no voice. And he didn't know what it was. And he was kind of afraid because he said he was in fine voice before the show started. And he was five songs in and he thought there was no problem. And he just continued to sing and he could not muster up the voice. And he said, I have to cancel. And so five songs in Berlin. And if anybody knows U2, Berlin is a huge city for U2. They made one of their most critically acclaimed and best-selling albums, Achtung Baby, in Berlin. It's got Mysterious Ways and a lot of other songs on there. And that's always been looked at as one of their watershed moments. Obviously, the Joshua Tree album is their best-selling, but Achtung Baby, which was, as I said, recorded in Berlin in the 80s, is viewed as one of their best quality song-for-song kind of cutting-edge albums. So for him to have stopped the show anywhere is kind of scary, but then to have done it in Berlin, where you know that the fan base is just wild for you too, and they always put on a great show in Berlin because of that connection, you know that it had to have been very serious. Now, apparently I have seen reports that during the show he saw a doctor and that they said it was not serious and that the tour would continue. I guess they even have a show tomorrow, September 4th, in Cologne, Germany. So they will continue the show, the tour as scheduled, and I guess they will go back to Berlin to make up this show sometime in November. But that, like you said, Elif, that's a huge undertaking. There's probably 15,000 to 20,000 people in the arena, and to just call off a show.
I've heard of a show being canceled for inclement weather in
right. No, this was indoors though.
But. For someone to stop mid-show and say, I can't do this anymore. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean, think
that's
about
so
that.
Disappointing.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you have been, I know the tickets for this tour, especially nowadays, you know, they announce a tour, especially a big tour like U2, they announce a tour a year in advance. These people probably had these tickets for 6 to 8 months, if not longer. You know, the realities of it, you know, especially U2 fans, people probably had to get babysitters or take days off of work. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this. Some people, as I said, U2 in Berlin, if I'm a U2 fan, I think that's a cool show to go to. Being the kind of fan I am of music people, like I said, I'm a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. I've seen him all around the country as well, and I've gone to really special shows that you say, okay, it's in this city, and you got to see him there type of thing. U2 in Berlin is a big deal, so for him to have canceled that show is got to be a thing. And I just it reminded me as I feel my own voice kind of getting a little scratchy here. As I said, I don't know. My wife's been sick for the last week. She's had a terrible cough, so I guess maybe all those germs flying around the house have finally cut into me. But I will, as I said, I unlike Bono, and I'm not casting aspersions against Bono, but I'm not calling this off, folks. I'll be here till 5. Scratchy voice or not. Let's go to the phones here. Someone's got some information on that. How you doing, Joan?
Doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Yeah, I was watching the news last night, and they did mention how he lost his voice, but they said the fans were so rabid there that he had them do the singing for him.
Yeah, right.
And they continued on.
Yeah.
So
well, I guess
you might want to look into that, you know.
Well, they continued probably as much as they could, but they did stop the show. So I think.
Oh, I know they stopped the show, but they didn't just say, okay, everybody go home. I think the fans would probably enjoy, you know, being able to pick it up and sing for him.
Well, you know what? I mean, and that's true, because I was just talking to somebody about Elton John, and in the 80s, he was having a lot of throat problems, and there was a show in New York where he even said at the outset of the show, I don't have much of a voice, but I want to play for you. And just as you said, the crowd basically sang the show to him.
Yeah. So there are ways around it,
yeah, I guess. And I'll tell you, I went to see The Who about 10 years or so ago. And when the show started, Roger Daltrey, who's, you know, I mean, if you know anything about the Who music, it is very intense, a lot of high notes,
yes,
screaming, yelling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know,
guitar.
Yeah, right. But I mean, you know, we won't get fooled again. There's that famous yell and everything.
Right.
So when they started the show, I could hear Roger Daltrey's voice very rough, very raspy. And I was saying to my friend who I went with, I said, there's no way he finishes the show, because the first song, you know, he's already, you could see him struggling. And sure enough, about halfway through, You Better You Bet, his voice was gone, and he just threw the microphone down and walked off.
Oh, okay.
And left.
Yeah.
And so
one way to do it.
Yeah, well, they finished the song, and then Pete Townsend says, well, Rogers had some problems, and he didn't know what was going on. He says, Rogers had some problems, so we're going, I've never sang this song, because Pete Townsend occasionally sings some songs, Roger Daltrey.
Yeah.
He says, I've never sung this song, but I'm going to do it now.
Uh-huh.
And they did a 20-minute version of My Generation waiting for Roger Daltrey to come back.
Okay.
And he did come back. I think he may have gotten some kind of a cortisone shot, like in his neck.
But he got him through.
But he got through. But I could see. So, I mean, that. I mean, certainly it's odd to have stopped the show.
Right.
But what are you going to do?
The show must go on, if it can.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joan. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I mean, that was so crazy. I could tell that Roger, I was like, there is no way he's going to finish the show. And sure enough, about halfway through, he's singing You Better, You Bet. And he's like, when I say, and all of a sudden, I could see his mouth moving and nothing coming out. And he just, you could see he was upset. Because this is, I mean, this is his livelihood. This is his instrument. He's proud of it. And he hopefully takes care of it. Now, I know in the ensuing years, he has had some surgery on his throat because, you know, singing those Who songs for 40-some years, almost, that's 50 years now, it's unbelievable that he can even still do it. And recently they did, Pete Townsend put on a classical version of Quadrophenia, and they didn't use the Who. They used an opera singer, a trained opera singer, to sing Quadrophenia, and there's a lot of, Love, Rain on Me, and a lot of those kind of belt-out, screamy songs of The Who. And this trained opera singer said, I don't know how Roger Daltrey sings those songs. And Eddie Vedder sometimes sings for The Who at benefits and things like that, and he says, I don't know how Roger Daltrey has been able to do that. It's really quite amazing. But yes, fear not, apparently, for whatever reason or whatever happened to Bono's voice a couple of nights ago in Berlin, it's nothing serious. I think he sounded like he was actually a little afraid, like, what, I've lost my voice. It is scary if you're a singer. A couple of years ago, Art Garfunkel lost his voice, and he thought it was gone. But apparently everything is okay. The tour will continue throughout Europe and go back to Berlin in November. So you two fans, don't worry. He's okay. But as I said, I just reminded me of that just now, as I can feel that my voice is getting a little scratchy, but no fear. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Wow, this show has flown by. We'll be only here for about another hour or so. Started at 1 o'clock, and we're working for a living here and getting done at 5 on Labor Day as we celebrate the labor movement in this country and the working man and working women of this country, which keep this country moving like clockwork. And we're talking about first jobs and worst jobs you've had. And I will be sharing some of my first jobs with you, as well as Elif, the producer, tonight. But right now, I'm looking at the phones here. We got someone on the line who wants to talk. Hey, Mark, how you doing? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I grew up with one of the inventors of the pacemaker for hearts.
Wow.
He had a little company named after himself, Wilson Great Batch Limited, and it was my job that summer to test and maintain the racks on which the batteries were tested, which was it was a pretty important job, because if a battery isn't tested, doesn't have some power drained off of it to begin with, it could malfunction inside of a patient, and that might result in the death of a patient who needs that battery to be working at top efficiency and top functionality in order to get that little blip that the pacemaker makes. And so it was my job to test the racks, and I even invented a little device to test them faster and more efficiently.
Oh, did you come up with that invention after working that job and seeing how it was done and then finding a better way?
Yeah, it wasn't any big highfalutin invention. It was just basically a rotary switch, and it meant that there were 12 individual battery stations in each rack, and each battery was loaded with a 100 ohm resistor, and that would slowly drain power off of it. And I even asked one of the staff, does that mean you're putting a battery inside of a person after it's been used a little bit. And she said, well, yes, it does, but it's better to do that than to not test it at all and then have it go out while it's inside the patient.
Wow. So now, when you were working for this company, were pacemakers, was the device still in the testing stages, or was it already being used?
No, this was in the 70s. It was already being used.
Okay.
And he had gone on from the pacemaker to the battery. So we were working on the batteries. And the idea of inventing a new battery was that it would last longer inside the patient so that the patient wouldn't have to be cut open so often. Now they've got it so that pacemaker batteries can be recharged wirelessly, you know, just like cell phone batteries are able to be.
Oh, is that? Oh, really? So there's no need for surgery?
Not nearly as often.
Now, do they still? Because I know that my dad passed away about 12 years or so ago, but he did have a pacemaker for about the last 5 or 6 years of his life, and he used to test it over the phone, like to see if the battery was still working.
What were the years during which he had his pacemaker?
Well, I think it was probably in the early 2000s?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the technology developed a lot farther by then. Because
yeah.
I was doing this job in the 70s. I had just finished 10th grade.
Wow. So that must have
been a pretty
interesting. It must have been pretty interesting.
Now can regulate individual heart ventricles.
Wow. So how did you get that job?
Well, because I knew Mr. Greatbatch from church. In fact, we young people used to call him Mr. G, and he was really outstanding at trying to give people opportunities, especially people who were regular in his life. And I also taught an adult Bible class in a Presbyterian church at age 15 because he felt I could do it, and he even brought me over to his home to give me pointers on how to be a teacher, and he was just always very supportive of youth, and we all had the connection with him, and he even hired a couple people outside of the church who were friends of people in the church.
And so basically, just to help educate us all, we all hear about pacemakers. It's now, to your point, it is now, at one time, of course, you know, the surgery and implanting some kind of a device on someone's heart would be looked at as some kind of almost a Frankenstein kind of, Dr. Frankenstein kind of operation. And now it is probably one of the most performed operations and probably one of the easiest to be done. And as you said, now the entire process of updating it with the batteries is much more efficient. And so just so I understand, so basically what happens is you put this device, I need a pacemaker because my heart isn't beating on with the right rhythm consistently. Is that why I get a pacemaker?
Well, that's basically it. And at the time he invented it, patients were having to carry boxes around because these things ran on tubes, and the transistor had just come out, and Mr. G asked himself, well, is there any way that I could use the transistor to make a pacemaker? Because, you know, then a patient could wear it inside of his chest rather than having to carry a box around. And one day, Bill Greatbatch totally gives God credit for this. He said that the pacemaker was invented because he made a mistake. He was trying to construct an oscillator circuit that would vibrate 1,000 times a second, and I won't explain that further, but he accidentally pulled the wrong resistor out of his parts box. He misread the multiplier band, and he put it in the circuit, and he saw on his screen a little blip that was right at the rate of a heartbeat, and he said that his jaw dropped because he said, this is what I need. I need a transistor circuit that will blip at the rate of a heartbeat, and it was right in front of him, and that was how the pacemaker was invented. It was invented by him making a mistake.
Well, half the time, I mean, right? Isn't that the way penicillin was discovered? Just some mold growing, and suddenly we have one of the most important you know, medical breakthroughs in terms of of people's health. Like, so a lot of times there are things that are certainly planned and they work out exactly the way, and then there are other times when divine intervention or just pure gosh darn good luck happens.
And he took a chance on me in another regard too. You see, I'm partially sighted, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to give this job. I'm going to give this guy a job anyway." And that turned out to be the only summer job I ever had. And it's been it's been difficult for me, if not impossible, to get hired throughout my life. But Bill Greatbatch has been one of those people who said, "Hey, you know, I believe in this guy. I think he can do it. And so we're going to give him a try."
Well, very good, Mark. I appreciate you sharing that that story, and certainly that the insight. And you are certainly have your finger on the pulse, if you will.
Yes, there you go.
All right. Have a good morning. Take care. Thank you. The pacemaker. Yeah, my dad had a pacemaker. I remember that he would check to see how the battery was using the phone somehow. I don't know how it worked. I don't know if people are still doing that today, probably, as you say, with the Wi-Fi technology. It's probably much more efficient. But interesting first job, testing batteries for pacemakers. Now, there's a job I never would have thought of. As we celebrate Labor Day and some of the crazy jobs or first jobs or interesting jobs or worst jobs that you had, any kind of job you want to talk about, I'd love to hear about it here. I'll be talking about mine after the news. As I said, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the text line if you want to text some information about the topic that we're talking about, or if you got something else you want to pass along. By all means, feel free, either on the phone or at the text. 312-981-7200. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. It is just about 4 a.m. We got another hour or so to go. Then I think we hand it off to David Plyer, and he's got a bunch of stuff planned for you, filling in for Steve Cochran this morning. So keep it tuned, as you always should be. I mean, what else would you be listening to? 720 a.m. WGN. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. As I said, Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We're working for a living here at WGN, 720 AM. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Happy Labor Day. I've been working for a living since 1 AM this morning. I don't know where you've been. Hopefully you've been out there. Somebody texted me and said, there's some nice things to say, which was nice, and they signed it The Silent Generation or something like that. So maybe there's a lot of people out there just listening, and that's fine. Hey, I know it's early. It's way early.
Do you think maybe they meant...
Yeah, what did they mean by that?
The millennial generation, which doesn't speak on the phone. They
text. Is that what that was?
I don't know. That's my literal understanding.
That might be that. Okay, that's one way to take it. You are a millennial.
Mm-hmm.
So you
that I am.
You would know all the millennial lingo.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one before. Yeah. That was just based on...
You're taking your millennial insights.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I was just talking right here is Elif Garris with a hard G. Garris, not Garris. Right. See, I wanted to see if you knew what a hard G or a soft G was. What's a hard G?
Good.
Very good. See, once again, what I love about this show, it's we're always trying to teach people. Elif, earlier before the show, we were talking, wanted to make sure I pronounced her name correctly, and I asked her if she her last name starts with or is pronounced with a hard G or a soft G, and she said, "Well, I don't know what that means, but my name is Garris." And I said, "No, well, your G is a hard G and a J is a soft G. So now you walk away. I don't know what happens after you leave today at 5 when we're done, and you say, 'Well, that was a waste of my time, but at least but at least I got paid.' But no, you will at least walk away with one nugget of information that you have never, that you did not have before, and will help you when people continue
through life.
Yes,
yeah.
People continue, and now I guarantee you. And when you do this, I want my face to snap into your head. When you start to introduce yourself, you're going to say, "I guarantee you," and don't do this on purpose, just to spite me. You are going to say, "Oh, my name is Elif Garris. That's with a hard G." You're going to start to add that.
I just panicked for a second because I already forgot which one was which.
Well, Elif, so we're talking about first jobs or worst jobs. I will share. I've shared a little bit with mine, but I will continue to do that. But tell us about some of yours. What was your first job?
My first job actually was babysitting. I babysat a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old and an 11-year-old. They were already kind of old.
And how old were you?
I think I was probably about 14.
14.
Yeah, and they were nice kids.
Were you a responsible, mature 14-year-old?
Because
I'm looking at you now, and I wouldn't leave my kids with you, even at your age now. So I can only imagine when you were 14. No, I'm joking.
Well, I don't know.
I really don't know the answer to that.
Somehow I was a little strict. Yeah.
Like, oh, really?
If they weren't getting ready for bed when they were supposed to be, I got really annoyed, and I'd be like, "You need to be brushing your teeth by now."
Oh my gosh.
And, yeah.
Were you ever called back?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was their regular babysitter, but I wasn't mean to them. Got the point across. You know.
No,
what I mean?
Hey, you have to. I mean, you have to keep kids in line.
Yeah. Otherwise, they'll step on you.
Yeah.
But they were actually pretty good kids. The older one, actually, they both read their book and they got in bed, and they were like, "Okay, I'll get in bed as long as you don't mind me reading my book first."
Oh, that's cool.
Super sweet.
Right. Now, how long did you do that for?
Babysitting in general, probably 2 years at the most.
Yeah. What was the going rate for a babysitter at that time? Do you remember how much you made an hour or a night, or how did it work?
I really don't remember.
No?
Maybe it was about $8 at the time.
For the whole thing or an hour?
An hour, yeah.
Nice. Tax-free.
Tax-free. And then
we won't tell the IRS about this, but keep going. No one's listening. Don't worry about it.
50,000 watts.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But then I nannied when I was around 23 for one boy who was 10, and he was lovely. I nannied him for a year every day, and while I was working here part-time, and he was awesome. He was super sweet. He kind of looked like me, which was weird. Like, I felt like I was his big sister
something.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
And he loved me.
Oh, that's cool.
We had this really cute relationship. It was awesome.
So did you get paid now for that? Because that's a more, longer kind of intensive job. Did you get paid a flat rate or by the hour?
Also by the hour, and it was 14.
Oh, wow. 14 hours?
14, oh, 14 an hour.
Oh, 14 an hour. Nice.
Yeah.
So it's you getting a raise.
Well, you're 20-something years old. It's about time. And
yeah.
You're trying to make ends meet.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I never... Now, so after you did the babysitting job for those two kids, did you get references, or did you basically just stay with them, or did you start to expand and do more jobs?
I worked in so many different types of jobs that I never really used them as... maybe I did. I don't remember, again. It was so long ago.
What other types of jobs did you do, then?
I worked at clothing stores. That took up most of my pre-full-time career job.
And what kind of, where, what stores?
Madewell and Urban Outfitters.
Urban,
and
look at you.
Yeah, I know.
What, well, a millennial.
Urban was first. And
Urban,
then,
just Urban.
Yeah, just Urban. That
Urban.
Was the nickname for it.
You.
I made some, yeah.
Herb.
UO.
Herb.
I made some friends at Herb that I'm still friends with.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Right. And my sister used to work there. So she was a manager, and she would boss me around sometimes, which was kind of uncomfortable. But
now, did you have to actually do a hard sell with them, or did you just kind of float around, and if someone needed help, you walked up to them.
The latter. When I worked at Madewell, it was different.
What's Madewell? What's that?
It's another clothing store, and they're known for denim.
Oh, denim.
They have really great jeans, and I still shop there.
Did you get, like, a discount?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I definitely got a discount, and I loved it. And nice. What was I going to say? Yeah, I don't remember.
So you pretty much were starting working, which is very nice and responsible of you. You should be complimented at age 14, babysitting, and then you continued. And that really is, I mean, I know a lot of kids that, over the last 15, 20 years, there's been such a pressure for kids to, get into college and make sure their college entrance exams and their entrance things have, all these, volunteer jobs and all these different things, And a lot of kids don't get jobs because they're so busy involved with activities at school.
Extracurriculars.
Extracurriculars and all this stuff, and they don't get a job. And I understand that it's good to stay active and have a well-rounded background in things, but you really can't supplement the kind of experience that you get by working. And it's not just making the money. It is the responsibility of being relied upon to do a certain job. To be there, to get there on time, to do the job well, to, in your case, not only take care of these kids, but make sure that they're doing what they need to be done. Their parents need to know what's happening. There are a lot of, even what might be considered an easy job still has its list of rules and qualifications, and it really does help you in your later life in terms of being organized, in terms of being on time, in terms of feeling an obligation. And I don't know how you feel, but I mean, when you do a good day's work, I feel good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's it's a very unique feeling. It doesn't just come from whether you're jogging or doing something else. There is a specific feeling of doing something that you like and doing it well and feeling like, hey, I did a nice job today. And so hopefully, I know, hey, everybody wants to get into college and stuff, but that's one thing that I've noticed. And when I was growing up, all my friends, I did, my friends did, we all had part-time jobs. As I said, I worked my last two years of high school and all through college with part-time jobs. So as well as going to school and doing a full load and all that. And I was involved in sports and other extracurriculars in college. I was obviously on the radio station and stuff. So, but it helps you to be able to multitask. It helps you to be more organized. It helps you how to use your time effectively. And as I said, when you're doing the job, you're getting there on time, you're doing what needs to do, you're focused on that, and then you switch gears and do something else. So I know a lot of parents out there, I'm going to make sure that my kid gets, but, don't over or underestimate the importance of a part-time job for a young kid, because it really does help in the maturation process as well as help you to learn skills that will certainly come into play throughout your life. We talked to somebody earlier in the show, and he said, hey, I was 8 years old cutting grass, and that's where he developed his work ethic from 8 years old. So, don't discount the importance of a job. The money is a nice little gravy at the end, and yeah, it was nice when I was in high school, too. I mean, my gosh. I was able to go out and go to, go out to movies and buy stuff. I mean, I had my own money. It was cool, and it meant something more because I earned it. So, don't underestimate the high school job, the first job, the first part time job, folks. It's an important thing for you. This is WGN Radio, AM 720. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. It's about 4:20 a.m. We started this extravaganza back at 1 o'clock. Can't believe it's already been 3 hours and 20 minutes. We got about another 40 minutes, and then we'll go under center. We'll call it on 2, then we'll hand it off to Dave Plyer, and he'll go through. Maybe we'll I'll fake a handoff and throw a pass to him in the flat. We'll see what we do. We'll either hand it off to him, or I'll do a pitch out to him, or maybe we'll just throw a little pass to the flat. But one way or the other, Dave Plyer will be getting the ball at 5 a.m., and he will be taking it to the end zone at 9 o'clock, filling in for Steve Cochran. So we're talking on this Labor Day, and as I said, happy birthday. Or not happy birthday, happy Labor Day. Happy birthday. Is somebody's birthday someday today, right? If it's your birthday today, see, all I was doing there, I was saying happy birthday to you. If today's your birthday, September 3rd, happy birthday. Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say happy Labor Day. No, happy birthday to you, whoever you may be. There's 50,000 watts. We go to about 37 states at this time, I think. Somebody's got to have a birthday, right? So if you're hearing me, it's your birthday today, happy birthday. That's what I love about that's the charm of an Elton Jim show. Lots of mistakes are made, but we always find a way to make them like they were done on purpose, even though most of them weren't. But you expect, if you want a tight show with no mistakes, I mean, you know, anybody could do that. But, you know, how fun is it to hear a show that's just bopping around? And every so often, there's a mistake. And so what? Who cares? We're having fun. It's real life. And my phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to touch base either by text or phone. Talking about first jobs or worst jobs, I'm sorry. I remember the first time I ever met you, you said your name, and I never heard. Is that I'm hearing that name more often, though. Do you ever hear that name? Your name?
Elif?
Yeah, do you hear it? Other people have it or no?
I only know Turkish people who have it.
I've heard that name. I mean, once I met you and it became, I was aware of it.
Ever present.
Well, I don't know if it's ever present, but I mean, once I met you and I heard your name, then I started to hear it. I mean, it's not like Mary, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I have heard other people with it. And is it a Turkish name?
Yeah, my cousin is actually about to marry a Turkish girl with my name.
Really?
Yeah.
So, in Turkey, is it like Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, really? So there's a million Elifs.
A million.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's like...
There's even an Elif bakery in Turkey.
Really?
Yeah.
So how did you just say it?
Elif.
Elif.
Yeah, perfect, so, actually. You got it perfect.
Elif.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really Elif.
No.
You Americanized it.
Mm-hmm.
Elif.
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 Yeah, that's
it.
Elif.
Elif. Mm-hmm. You almost sound like you're Irish. Elif. You know, it sounds like an Irish name. Is it an Irish? It's not an Irish name.
It does sound Irish.
It does sound a little Irish, but you're telling me that it's Turkish. Elif.
It's Turkish, lad.
Yeah, Elif. Because I didn't know what your last name was, it sounds Irish.
Garris?
No, Elif.
Oh.
Elif.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you like that name or not?
No. That was funny to see you fall.
So if you could change your name,
what would it be?
What would you change it to?
I don't know.
You don't? You've never thought of that? If you don't like this name, didn't you say, geez, I wish my name was Jane, or?
I don't know if I would want an American name. That sounds uppity, but I don't know if I would.
So then what would be, if...
I like Esmeralda, though.
Oh, you like Esmeralda?
Oh, great. She's not there. She didn't hear me sucking up.
But Elif, what's another Turkish name? Like a common Turkish name?
Tuba.
Tuba?
Mm-hmm.
Like I blow a tuba?
Yeah, tuba, though.
How do you spell it?
T-U-G, the G is silent, B-A.
Oh, T-U-G-B-A.
So the G elongates the U in front of it.
So
tuba.
It's tuba.
Mm-hmm.
Tuba.
Actually, though, my sister has a really pretty name, and so does my mom.
What's your sister's name?
It's Serra, S-E-R-R-A.
Serra.
Serra.
It's not Sarah.
No, but that's what we call it here.
Right.
And my mom's name is Esra. I think I would want to name my, if I have a daughter, Esra.
How does she spell it? E-S-R-A. E-S-R-A.
Yeah, and Esra. It means secret in Turkish.
Oh, that's cool. Esra. That's not bad, because that's almost like Ezra, but Esra.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
So that's an easily Americanized name, too.
But Elif is a very common name, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because I got news for you. Here in America, it isn't.
Newsflash.
But I was talking about my first job. I was, what, 16, 17? I was in high school, junior in high school. And, yeah, I got a job at good old Jewel. Good old grocery store. Jewel started out as a bagger at on the northwest side at Belmont and Central. 5129, that was our store. The address of the store was like the number of the store. That's how you identified the store there. In the, I don't know how it is now in the Jewel system, but back then you were identified as to where you worked by the name, the number of your store, and the number of your store was the address. So I worked at the good old fighting 5129. 5129 Belmont, like Belmont and Laramie on the northwest side. And, yeah, I worked there for what, maybe 4 years, 3-4 years. And then I believe when I was a sophomore or junior in high school, I worked at a health club for about a year and a half. And then I got an internship at Channel 2 here in Chicago, the TV station. And that's when I sort of started to do things in the radio and TV and communications world. But yeah, I mean, that Jewel job was close. What was great about that Jewel job was it was close to home. I used to walk. It was 3 or 4 blocks away from my house, so it was nice and close. So I didn't have to, you know, it wasn't a big commute. If I had to start at a certain time, it only took me 15 minutes or so to walk. So that was nice to get home as well. And, you know, once again, though, this was the real world. I mean, you had to, you know, we had to punch in a time clock, you know, and you had your 3 or 4 hour shifts. I was a member of a union. We're talking about Labor Day today. When I was 17, I was already a member of a union. I can't remember what the union was called. I'm obviously haven't been in a union since then. But, yeah, when I was like 17 years old, I was already in the union. And I was a bagger, and I used to love bagging. I was very good at it, and I still enjoy it. In fact, when we go to a grocery store, I will bag my groceries. And now, what was interesting, I was when I started bagging, I was there at a very pivotal time in the bagging world, if you will, of a grocery store bagger. Because when I started, there were paper bags. And then about 2 years in, they introduced the plastic bag, and that was earth-shattering. And now, of course, once again, 40-some years later, now they want to get rid of the plastic bag and bring back the paper bag, which I think is hilarious because we, when the plastic bag was being introduced, we were forcing people to use the plastic. And they didn't want to use the plastic. They wanted the paper. We were like, plastic, and they were getting all. And then finally, they just stopped even stacking the paper bags, you know, in our little area there. It was all plastic. And so now I think it's funny because now when you go to the store, they ask you, is plastic okay? Or, you know, do you have your reusable bag? But, yeah, I mean, I used to, when I used to love doing this double bag and paper bags, you double bag them. You get a nice base of cans on the bottom. Then you get a familiar, you know, to have a nice balanced bag. You have a nice. I would always just like scan the food that was coming down the belt there, and see, okay, what am I gonna? It wasn't just some willy nilly thing. You know, you waited. You saw if you saw 5 or 6 cans, you go like, okay, I get those cans first. I lay my base down, then I get my boxes. So I would put like say 4 or 5 cans on the bottom. Maybe there's a box of cereal. You put that on the side, and then maybe there's some produce, like a head of lettuce, or maybe even some grapes. And then you put the grapes or the head of lettuce on top of the can again, right, and let it rest on the side of the cereal box. And then, of course, and it's not a cliche, you know, your delicates. You know, maybe your grapes a little more delicate than, you know, like say a cantaloupe or something. You put the grapes on the top, of course, as I said, may sound cliched, but you put your eggs on the top, and that's a nicely distributed and nice, sturdy, firm bag right there. Thank you very much. I used to love bagging. It was very, in fact, soon after I started, I was already put on the super team because I was a fast bagger too. And they had like, so they, on Saturdays when it was really crowded, I would be the bagger, and then there would be a woman who was checking, and she was real fast at checking because once again this was before the scanners, so she was still hitting the buttons with her fingers. And then they had another woman. This is like the super team. There was this one aisle on a Saturday because it was so crowded. There would be the fast checker. There'd be a woman sitting standing right behind the checker, pushing the stuff down to me. So we wouldn't have to wait for the slow belt. Get it to me fast, and I would be zipping and putting that stuff in the bag. So by the time they were done paying that bill, they pushed the cart was full, and they are out, and we are on to the next one. Woo! Boy, that was fun. I still have my jewel badge with my little pin with my name on it. Thanks, Mom, for keeping that. It is 4:31. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGiulio here on a Labor Day Monday. Happy Labor Day to you. Hope you have the day off and you'll be enjoying whatever you're going to be doing today. Right now, I hope you're enjoying listening to the show at WGN.
Just whistle while you work. And cheerfully together we can tidy up the place. So I'm a merry day. It won't take long when there's a song to help you set the pace. And as you sweep the room, imagine that the broom is someone that you love and so you
can. Whistle while you work. I never realized until I just started to play some of these work songs before and coming out of the commercials and things. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs have two work songs. Whistle while you work. And then I played a little earlier. The Seven Dwarves, or I guess in 2018, the Seven Little People, sing Hi Ho, Hi Ho. It's off to work we go. Yeah, I wonder if Snow White and the Seven Dwarves was made today in 2018. Would they have to change the title? Is that politically correct? Walt Disney and the Disney Company certainly is very cognizant of political correctness. They don't want to offend anybody, and so I wonder if they would go that far. But right now, the official title is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I'm not being insensitive. I'm just calling the movie by its title. Jim Toronto filling in this morning for Nick DiGiulio on this Labor Day. We've been talking about jobs, first jobs, worst jobs. I thankfully, in my life, in my career, I have had some jobs that I didn't particularly like, but I didn't think they were terrible. I've never had one of those, thankfully. I've had some jobs that I didn't like as much and knew that this is not something that I wanted to do for any extended period of time. But I certainly didn't hate it, or it wasn't the worst job, or thankfully I didn't have to do something where you have to do something kind of gross. I didn't have to clean out, outhouses or porta potties or something like that. So thankfully I've never had to do that. In fact, I kind of joke, and I don't know if it's a badge of honor or something to be embarrassed at. But as I said, my hands, I have done very little physical labor in my life. My hands are like a baby's bottom. They are soft and milky.
Nice. Can I tell you something hilarious regarding hands?
Yes.
Being soft?
Yes.
I was introducing my mom to a boyfriend in college, and she, after she shook his hand, she said, "His hands are rough. He must be in a blue-collar job."
See? Right.
Crazy. I was like, "Mom." Or he works out. I mean,
what did he do? Did he use his hands?
He actually, what he did was he did like gymnastics outside.
Oh, so he was
doing this thing called parkour.
Right. Yeah. No, on my hands, there is not even a hint of a callus anywhere. I mean, I would venture to say I can only imagine how soft my hands would be if I even used moisturizer. Oh my gosh, they would be softer than a baby's. Yeah, they would be. There would be no friction. I couldn't even hold on to a steering wheel. I mean, my gosh. But yeah, they are as soft and milky as a country maiden, if you will. Wow, how's that for a visual?
That's a good one. Yeah. Creative.
But, yeah, no, I don't know if I should be proud of that or not. I'm sure a lot of people are listening and saying, boy, what a girly man. Sorry. But, you know, early on in my career, as I said many times, I used to get in trouble in school at a very young age. I always got good grades. But, you know, on your report card underneath where it said behaviors, I would always get talks too much in class. Jim is a joy to have in class, but he talks too much. Talks too much, talks too much. So early on, I was saying to myself, well, if... Because I didn't think I talked too much, and I enjoyed it, and I always had a little audience around me, and
So they egged you on?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, I always felt like I was entertaining, and I used to, you know, entertain the troops, if you will, in class, and I would always... You always wonder, like, when you get into this business especially, I mean, you know, believe me, if you get into radio, you have to be amazingly arrogant to think that you are so interesting that people would want to listen to you talk. It is an amazing arrogance that you have to have. And I don't care what anybody says. They may deny it. I'm just being honest with you. It's an amazing narcissistic arrogance to think that other people would want to hear you talk for 4 hours or 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever it is. To get in front of a mic like this and talk like this, you've got to have an inflated vision of yourself and an inflated vision of your ability. But you get that, just as Elif was saying, from an early age. I would in my little group of friends or in school, you know, you'd be talking around, you're making jokes, and people would laugh, and you get some positive reinforcement. But always, as I got older, as, you know, a younger kid, I'm older meaning, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 into high school, where I said to myself, well, maybe there is something to this. I was making the teachers laugh. I was making the adults laugh. When I was making the adults laugh, and I was only 14 or 15, I'm like, okay, maybe I've got something here. And so, you know, so quickly, I decided that, especially as I talked earlier, I used to cut grass as a little kid and stuff. I really didn't enjoy manual labor very much. So I tried to think, what could I do where I wouldn't need to lift or carry or push or sand or hammer or whatever it is? And so I went this route. Aside from a hoarse voice or a scratchy voice... And I've done other things in my life, in my career. I've done, I've worked as a journalist. I was a reporter. I was a columnist. I was a magazine editor, newspaper editor. I worked in public relations for 10 years. I still freelance write. I've been writing about music and entertainment since I was 20 years old for newspapers and magazines. In fact, if you went to Ravinia this summer, hopefully you... checked out the Ravinia magazine. I wrote about 5 or 6 stories for the Ravinia magazine throughout the summer. I wrote a story about Roger Daltrey and The Who because he was there performing Tommy. I wrote a story about 80s music. In the September issue that should be out now. And there's one of the last shows is a story about Johnny Rivers and Jimmy Webb. There's a double bill at the Ravinia on September 15th, and I wrote a story about that show. Johnny Rivers been around since the 60s and 50s and 60s. Hits like Memphis and Baby, You Need Your Loving and Secret Agent Man. And Jimmy Webb, you might not know the name, but he wrote songs like By the Time I Get to Phoenix and Wichita Lineman, the great Glenn Campbell song. All I Know, MacArthur Park. That was a hit for both Richard Harris and the great disco hit by Donna Summer. So Jimmy Webb will be opening for Johnny Rivers. I wrote a story about that. But like I said, so I've done a lot of things, but it's been mostly, you know, white-collar creative stuff. I have stayed away, and I tell you, I got a friend of mine, and I give him so much credit because he works his butt off. And, you know, he's a painter and he does a lot of other things, you know, handyman, you know, does a lot of stuff. And he has got so many calluses on so many parts of his body, places that I never thought calluses would even grow. And, And I have so much respect for him because he works so hard. And it's funny because one time I remember seeing he had a callus on the front of his foot. And I said, what the heck is that?
Folks like me on the job from 9 to 5.
Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning, not working 9 to 5. Come on, that's 8 hours. Boy, how 1 to 5? Working 1 to 5. That's what I was working this morning. Started at 1 a.m., and here we are ticking few to the last couple of moments before we, as I said, I'm going to either hand it off, I may do a pitch out, or I may throw a short pass in the flat to Dave Plyer. One way or the other, Dave will be getting the ball and taking you through from 5 a.m. till 9 as he fills in for Steve Cochran this morning. Thank you all for listening. I hope you were listening from the beginning of the show. I think we had a fun show today. It was I thought it went very fast, and it was very fun. I had a good time. We talked about jobs. We celebrated a little Labor Day, and as I said, hopefully you will have a nice Labor Day today. Hopefully the weather will accommodate whatever you have planned, whether it's just hanging out at home or maybe doing a some kind of a party or a cookout or whatever it may be. As I said, taste of Polonia. I may have, if the weather holds up, I may take a ride over to Taste of Polonia to get some kielbasa and some pierogies. Mmm. On Milwaukee and Lawrence at the Copernicus Center, Taste of Polonia might be a cool way to spend your Labor Day. I want to thank Ilif Garris. Do you say Garris or Garris?
Garris.
So it is Garris.
Yes.
So you say this Ilif thing.
Ilif.
Ilif. You sound, you do this Irish Ilif thing, but then you get all Garris on me.
Well,
Ilif Garris.
Ilif?
Ilif?
I'm not Italiano.
Ilif? Ilif Garris.
Ilif Garris.
Oh, Garris, see?
Yeah.
See, I told you it wasn't Garris. Say it the way you say it.
There's a hook on the S.
Yeah, so say it the Garris.
Ilif Garris.
Garris.
Mm-hmm.
Garris. So it's Ilif Garris. Ilif Garris, right?
Yeah.
All right. Why don't you say it that way? Don't Americanize it.
Because we don't have a hook on our S's here.
You know, I mean, Dave Plyer is not really Dave Plyer.
That's
Plyer. Yeah.
Plyer.
It's Plyer. It's French.
Oh.
Uh-oh, wait,
he just said it is actually Plyer.
Okay. What, let's see. What microphone are you getting on here? Which one is that?
Six.
That's six? All right. Are you on?
Oh, maybe it's five.
Oh, thanks.
Sorry.
Thanks, Ilif Garris.
Whoopsies.
Oh, wait, no. Yeah, there we go.
Well, you know what? I just put all of them up.
That's what I always do, too, believe it or not. That's brilliant, actually.
I don't know which one you're on right now, but I don't care.
Yeah.
So what is the origin of your name?
It is, man, I just broke the mic. Hold
on. Oh, my gosh,
here.
The studio is like 3 months old. You're already breaking things.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to hear me shuffle for a minute here.
Oh, my gosh.
It is French, actually.
So it is plié.
It is plié.
I was joking.
Yeah, no, it was plié.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Dave plié?
Yeah, and then I've heard also Plier.
Plier?
Plier, but it is really not Plier. But
your name
it's P-L-I-E-R. Yeah.
Plié?
Yeah.
Very. I was
Isn't
just kind of joking because,
yeah?
I mean, I learned my French from, I was a hockey fan at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, that makes sense.
So all of a sudden, I would get my hockey cards.
Yep.
And I would read them Americanized, but then when I would watch the games on television, they would say the names in French.
Right. Of course.
So, for instance, there was a guy on the New York Rangers named Rod Gilbert.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
But
yeah,
it was spelled Rod Gilbert.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So as a kid.
Yeah, so I'm over
that
there.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so I owe my hockey cards. I'm like, Rod Gilbert. I'm watching the game, and I hear Rod Gilbert. Who's that? Or Reen Robert.
Yeah.
René Robert.
That's, yeah. Roger Badiche.
Roger Badiche. I don't think he's. I don't think he's French. So he's not here today.
He's
he was here. He was here.
Oh, that's right. Yes, right, of course.
Yeah, because now this is the week. So, yeah. Dave Plie,
yes,
if you will.
That's right.
What do you have planned for your show?
What do I have planned for the show?
What does Jimmy say have you planned for your show today?
We are doing very some Pepe Le Pew. Very Pepe Le Pew you are today.
Little patisserie?
What am I doing? We are doing...
I can tell you. I heard your promo.
Well, we're going to do a little... here, how about this, though? He's done like four Labor Days because his birthday is this Wednesday. So he's going to be
how
the big 89.
89
years old, yeah.
Wow.
Sharp as a tack. And
you know what's
funny?
Still?
Yes, and he always says to me, you know, because we talk during the week. That's kind of the prep on this stuff. And he says, I've got a list of stories I haven't told you before. So he logs down the stories he's told you. So different versions, whatever it might be. So we've kind of got a little plan in place. But we're also going to talk about the... Legacy of the Labor Day Telethon, because that's what
yes,
we grew up watching,
I talked,
right?
I talked about that. Today's show actually was the Elton Jim Toronathon.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's... I mean, that was part of... I mean, you watched that show, and Dean was part of that. If you remember here in Chicago, he did a little of that, too. But there was a time where it was really, really, really big-name stars. I mean, huge.
I started the show by playing the opening from the 1985...
Mm-hmm.
The Jerry Lewis Super Show, it was called.
Wow.
From...
Who was on?
Oh, Nobody's Alive.
Okay, yeah. Were the Statler brothers
except
there?
Except for Norm Crosby.
Norm Crosby
was the only one who was alive.
Wow, yeah. So,
you know, but aside from that...
Yeah, so we're going to do that, and then Jared Payton's going to talk a little bit. You know, we're back to school, and so we're going to talk...
Be afraid...
Oh, yeah, look at that.
...of the dark.
Oh, that's the finale.
Yes!
At the end of the storm.
Oh, man, and he got nasty toward the end, though.
I know.
I was watching the 2000, but was it 10 was the last one, maybe?
10 or 11.
Yeah, it was somewhere around there. Bill Jerry.
Well, I said, whatever you want to say, and I said this about Jerry, I love the telethon. I would watch it every year.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want about Jerry. He was a very polarizing personality.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't politically correct.
No.
He was one of the greatest entertainers of the 20th century on his own with his movies, Nutty Professor, Cinderfella, obviously with Dean Martin. They were the Beatles.
Yeah, they were.
When they were around.
Absolutely. I was watching that when Dean and when Sinatra brought Dean Martin out.
Oh, it's a classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But whatever you want to say about Jerry, at the end of the day, he was very serious about this telethon.
Oh, yeah.
He raised over $2 billion.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And he put MDA
on the map.
On the map. Oh, he did.